Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the Growing Conservative Conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us at the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. So definitely check that out and check out our Twitter team. Tonight, our guest is Floyd Whitley of the Constitution Party, who joined me, the host, our panelist, Cindy Tata, which for those who are regular listeners to the show may have not have heard from her in a couple weeks. She's had some technical difficulties lately, so hopefully we'll be hearing her on the show perhaps tonight. If not, she will be coming back with us soon. And also we have founder of the Overpasses for America, James Neighbors. He's working on some projects himself. And also we have our constitutional scholar, Kelly Mordecai, and our contributor, Dan Gray, former columnist of the Washington Times. And, of course, you can call us tonight at 347-945-7428 so you can join our roundtable discussion, because once folks call in, and, of course, they're respectful to our guests, hosts, and audience, your line will stay on. And so, as I said, Bard's Logic does welcome Floyd Whitley of the Constitution Party. And we will discuss many topics tonight, including party politics and upholding the Constitution, the Constitution Party's Idaho State Convention, their Valor Quilt fundraiser, and the party's positions on issues such as illegal immigration and the economy. We'll also talk about their fall National Committee meeting on November 15th and 16th here in Cincinnati, Ohio. We may also hear from tonight the National Vice Chairman of the Constitution Party, Randy Stuffelbeam. So he may be calling in later on this evening as well. And so we, without any further ado, we will bring in our guest for tonight, and that is Floyd. Thank you very much, Floyd, for calling to the show. How are you?
Oh, doing fine. About to drown in Jerome, Idaho. But I appreciate you having me on. That's, I'm glad.
Well, it's great to have you. Go ahead, Floyd.
Oh, no. In Jerome, I've had some different weather down here. It's been a couple of days of steady rain, and that doesn't happen down here in August very often. People pull over and start doing all kinds of prayers in the middle of the road, I guess, because of the rain. It's something they don't usually see down. Neither do we, really, most of Idaho.
It's been unseasonably cool up here in Ohio.
Really? Yeah, my wife texted me this morning and said they're setting up a fire camp at our place. Setting up on the ridge above our place, less than a quarter of a mile, so burning up north and pounding down south. Anyway, talk to me.
All right, well, I know you're reporting live from a state fair out there in Jerome, Idaho, and we're having a little bit of problems hearing you. So if you can maybe speak a little louder or maybe put the phone closer, that'd be great. So tell us about the state fair and what the Constitution Party is doing there.
Well, we're at the Jerome County Fair.
Okay, Jerome County Fair. I'm sorry, I'm corrected.
And they have a pretty respectable radio here, too, which is ongoing. In fact, the announcer and stuff you'll hear in the background is about to take the place outside. We're actually inside a building here. Probably, I don't know, maybe all told 50 people in here, various vendors and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was thin people, so it was nowhere near the crowd one would expect.
Right, I guess the heavy rains are having some effect there. And you also were going to have some other folks there as well from the Constitution Party. Were they able to make it tonight?
Well, I have Mr. Van Haddix here from Jerome, who's helping us out at the booth, not knowing, of course, how many people we would have in the building. Rain sends them out, so to speak. So we've been handing out our virtual.
Yeah, we're really having a difficult time, unfortunately, hearing you, Floyd.
Oh, you are? Is it because of the background noise?
Well, no, it's just simple. I don't really hear the background noise much at all itself. Perhaps you're at a bad spot or where just I need to speak a little louder. I don't know, but we don't hear a lot of background noise. It just you seem kind of low.
Well, I guess I could go outside. I'll have to unwire and walk it out. Anyway, kind
of sounds a little bit better there.
All right, so we're outside in the halfway rain. there you go. There.
Oh, well, yeah, we can hear more people out there too.
Yeah, a few. A couple of guys here trying to sell window rippers. To sell some services for cleaning windows and blinds. All kinds of people.
Yeah, now we're definitely getting the background noise, unfortunately. I guess that's one of the organic things of doing a live show, live report from out at a fair or something like that, huh?
Well, this is the kind of thing we have to do. We are going to talk to our fellow citizens. We have to go where they are. It can be costly and tiresome because when I leave this, I'm going to be all the way up on the Canadian border. Starting Monday, I guess Tuesday. At any rate, we're doing. One of the things that we have here in this area is a very strong Republican envoy, Idaho itself.
I apologize for that. I know we thought perhaps if you went outside we'd be able to hear you better, but unfortunately you're being overpowered by the folks trying to sell their wares, and now I'm actually hearing them better, so I apologize for that heavy move out there. So now we're in competition with those folks trying to have you on or hear you.
Right. Well, that's the PA you were hearing was actually the rodeo. That's taking place at the same time as the fair is.
Oh, I got it.
I'm walking away from the rodeo grounds, and the crowds of people, as you would expect at a county fair. This actually is a pretty big county fair. A lot of counties in Idaho are very small populated. This is about a mid-sized population county.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Republicans down here, and it's difficult to make headway for an alternative party because they are entrenched. Their idea is that you guys can't win, so no support. And
you hear that a lot?
We do. But, you know, we've heard that for 27 years, and we're still in the game. We're also finding that they play a political game that's a lot rougher these days than it has been in the past. We fielded a very strong candidate up, and that's one of the reasons why I'm running up to the Canadian border next week, a county fair up there, Boundary County. We have a very strong young man up there, 21, very articulate, intelligent, full of energy, conservative, Christian, and the way the Republicans sometimes do things is if there's a scare that this upstart candidate might make some headway, you know, they look for alternative game plans, or apparently they'll put up a ringer in that particular district to force the Constitution Party into a primary. That's the first primary that's ever been forced in the Constitution Party candidate. And that, of course, costs money. So our candidate, Christian Chiaravanti, there had to come through about $3,000 of money that he was trying to save for the general, but the fourth primary, which he won, ended up bleeding some of that money out. And, of course, the beneficiary.
Okay. Yes, well, I apologize. If you could talk loud or something, I'm really having a difficult and I apologize for that. I'm really having a difficult time hearing you.
Wow. I don't know if I can talk any louder.
I apologize for that. I know for folks listening on the computers, if they're having a difficult time listening, of course, they got the benefit of being able to turn up the speakers, and perhaps it's coming around good for them, where they can hear fine. It's just perhaps something on my end, hearing through my headset, you know, being here. What's the thing for me is I can't turn mine up any longer, so hopefully for them it's better.
Well, it's kind of getting to be a busy place, light rain, and so there are more people turning out, and it's probably going to be difficult to hear me. I don't know how much louder I can talk. I'll be yelling here pretty soon.
No, okay. Anyway, we don't want you yelling and losing your voice. It's very important that you have your voice there, you know, to talk to folks. So let's go down to one of the things, your efforts there. And then we'll bring on a couple callers. Namely, we have Randy Stelpelbeam, as I said earlier, from the National Vice Chairman of the Constitution Party. He's been on here a couple times before, and I'll be glad to hear from him and talk with him again. And so talk about the Valor Quilt that was made, and you guys are raffling off to try to raise some funds for your Constitution Party down there.
Right. Well, we're not corporate-backed, of course, and we have to come up with some kind of way to put money into our treasury. So my wife graciously offered to put together a quilt, and I helped her with that by cutting the stuff out and ironing the seams flat. And so we produced a quilt. It's called a Valor Quilt. You will sometimes see these across the U.S. now for to honor veterans. And so we made a handmade quilt, and it's actually a traveling quilt, and that's why we're here in Rome, actually, to sell the raffles to that quilt, to raise funds to be able to produce literature and continue events. That's why we're doing this. We're attempting to refill our treasury because it costs money to do these kinds of things. And we decided we would go with an old-fashioned way, and that would be a quilt wrapper. This quilt will be traveling all over Idaho. Again, next week it's going to be up on the Canadian border, and then it will be down in back from that, it will be up in Coeur d'Alene. it was in Cascade on the weekend. So it's traveling around the state, and, you know, we're attempting to raise funds with it to put into our treasury. That's basically the bottom line. We decided we were going to work for our money, and that's what we're doing.
And how much are the raffles? How much are the tickets?
Well, the raffle donation is $2 a ticket. If your listeners were interested, they could certainly send a check in the mail to our treasurer. He's up in Coeur d'Alene. Send it by mail, even, and he can get you the ticket stuff and just record your address and phone number, particularly, so we can contact you should you be lucky enough to win it. We're going to draw the tickets on the 24th of August at the close of what is called the North Idaho Fair. Now, that's going to be much, much bigger than this one. But, you know, it's a method for us to try to refill our party's treasury and recover some of the monies that we've spent this year that we didn't plan to spend. But again, the primary up north was costly. The state convention we just had was very expensive as well. But one of the things, we're not corporate owned, and that's we have to work for it.
Well, and to answer the folks who said, oh, you know, oh, you guys can't ever win, you know, well, I got a few, I was looking at one of the, on constitutionparty.com, there's a newsletter on there, and it looks like, you know, there's been some successes, at least locally, with Constitution Party members. I mean, A.J. Burton is on the Medical Lake City Council. And we also have, and that's in Washington, and then in Utah, Bryce Hamilton is on the Dutchess City Council, and then Steve Johnson on the Enoch City Council. So also in Oregon, you have Mary Starrett from the Yamhill County. She's a Yamhill County Commissioner. So there's definitely, you know, at least locally, some Constitution Party candidates that have become, you know, representatives. Well, you know, at least on the city council that I've seen, and even county commissioners.
Well, I think based on the dynamics up north, we have two potential. We may well win in District 1, and that's a state senate seat. District 4, we might as well. And that particular race was interesting because of a long-term, powerful Republican incumbent was kicked out in the primary. And so our candidate is running head-to-head with the person that won the Republican primary at the District 4. That would be Coeur d'Alene. A lot of the people in Coeur d'Alene absolutely do not like this challenge. So that dynamic might be interesting to watch as we go into the conversation. But in District 1, we certainly stand a chance to win that. What else?
It looks like... It's cutting in now there a little bit, Floyd. What I'm going to do here is... Are you there?
I am. I may walk in back inside the building. It could be signal that's bouncing around due to the rains out here.
Sure, certainly. And then also, unfortunately, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's some forces against us. I hate to think it's my friend Mother Nature, but it seems like a lot of these grassroots activities that's happened this summer has experienced a lot of rain. Who knows, maybe the powers that be actually have made a way of doing some rainmakers in order to try to tout some of the grassroots efforts. I said that kind of tongue-in-cheek, but who knows. So this time what I'll do is when you're moving back in there, what would be great is if, you know, some folks come by who are giving support for yourself and the Constitution Party, if they want to come on and say some words on why they're supporting the Constitution Party. Go ahead, and also if you could tell us like go to a website online to order some of the tickets, or is it pretty much just folks local?
No, no, we have this up on our website as well. Our website is an official website for the party. It's www.cpidaho.org, and you can surf around on the site. There's articles on there, and also our fundraiser, the quilt. our treasurer is Ray Ritz up in Coeur d'Alene, and you can mail to him, Post Office Box 186, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 83816. Surprised I remembered all of that.
And also, one of the things I know we want to talk about, you guys recently had, was your Idaho State Convention, correct? That was just earlier this week, or?
Yeah, well, on Friday, 1st of August, we had a working session, and then the convention itself was on the 2nd of August in Cascade. That's why the quilt was down in Cascade at that point. But we did, yes.
And how did that go? Tell us about that.
Well, the state convention, of course, is where you do things that are required of you under, in our case, the Idaho Code. But there are certain things that we're required to do, one of which would be to pass bylaws. And we are actually mandated to do that. And we are mandated to meet as a state convention every two years during the general election year. And so we accomplished that. We adopted the platform, which is now updated. And we adopted some resolutions. Resolutions are designed for specific subjects. For example, the State Executive Committee on Friday night issued a resolution calling for a censure and a removal of Federal Circuit, Eighth Circuit, Federal Court Judge Koff. He's out of Nebraska. And once I get off the road, we're going to follow that to the Eighth Circuit seeking his removal.
Waiting for you, I don't want to interrupt. So tell us, I know the national platform for the Constitution Party is, you know, probably pretty similar to the state ones. But since we're here, and then we'll talk more when we bring on bring Randy on. Tell us some of the things in the Idaho, Idaho platform. I'm sorry.
Well, we have an issue at this point, and we had to deal with this. And this is kind of an uncomfortable thing to deal to bring out publicly, but we really had no choice. for example, the Idaho Constitution Party stands for traditional marriage. You know, marriage is between a man and a woman, and the redefinition of it we do not accept. And so Idaho right now is involved in appealing a Ninth Circuit judge, a mid-level judge, is appealing his decision to call the will of the people of Idaho unconstitutional in respects to refusing to accept homosexual relationships as being defined as marriage. And so, you know, that became an issue with our candidate at the top of the ticket. Mm-hmm. He actually decided he wanted to request Idaho not to appeal. And as of today, the news is that the appeal has now gone through, and so Idaho is now standing in appeal against the decision of the Ninth Circuit. But our candidate at the top had some issues which we don't necessarily accept. And so therefore, at convention, his endorsement was withheld. And so now we're confronted with what do we do about that? And they're actually looking at this point of going to the Secretary of State and issuing a replacement and see where that falls in the interpretation of the Idaho Code. We're looking at that, actually. But sometimes you have things like this, but the only way to deal with them is straight up, straight out, forthright, and that's what we've done. So, difficult convention.
Yeah, definitely, you know, keep me posted on that. We'll keep an eye on that. We'll, you know, talk more about, you know, the platform and issues, especially in the 2014 election year. And also, I did have a question. I'm going to raise this question for Randy as well. Is on the November 15th and 16th is when the fall meeting is going to be, and I believe that's after the 2014 election. Do you know if that was something that was purposely picked for that date? Be after the 2014 election?
I don't know that that's the case, but I would say that that is intending to be the custom. The one immediately following 2012 was at the end of November, I believe November 30 and December 1st. I forgot the location of that. It was St. Louis, I think. But at any rate,
November 30
right. So perhaps that was purposely chosen. I can't say.
Floyd?
Our national. Yes, sir.
Okay, well, while we wait for Floyd to come back in, I'll pose the same question to the National Vice Chairman of the Constitution Party, and that is Randy Stoffelbeam. Thank you very much, Randy, for calling into the show. Your mic is live. It's great to hear from you again. How are you?
Hey, Robert. It is awesome to be here with you, as always. And, you know, I just really appreciate all the things that you do, especially in light of, you know, one of the news outlets out there say that they are fair and balanced, but I would have to say that, you know, if they are the conservative.
Okay, let me go ahead and try to bring in our contributor and panelist, Dan Gray. Dan, are you on the line?
I am. How are you? Robert, are you hearing anything?
He must not be hearing anything.
I don't think that's the issue.
Well, we can all hear each other. He's having technical issues, too.
Yeah, apparently so.
I think it's the NSA again, actually.
they're always after us, man.
You bet they are.
No. They're after you, Randy.
Hey, you know what? I got broad shoulders, and if they're after me, at least they're not after you.
Yeah.
Is that top
candidate
you were talking about? Were you mentioning the fellow who was not adhering to the party line? Is that Stephen Pankey?
It is.
I was just looking online. Tell me now. You obviously know the fellow. Is this conscience or is this convenience on his part?
Well, it's difficult to say. First of all, I would not overstate my knowing him. I've met him prior to the state convention. I met him once in January. Had a meeting with him and our lieutenant gubernatorial candidate, Dave Hardigan, down in Nampa. And that was really only about an hour-long meeting. Whether it's convenience or conscience, I think perhaps convenience. And the reason I say that is because in 2008, he ran as a Constitution Party candidate for sheriff in his local county, Lincoln. And the endorsement by the party was rather glowing, and there was no indication of any of this at any time until this story came out. Nobody had a clue that this was going on.
Yeah, you know, this is a real problem that we run into all the time. I'm in Pennsylvania. Peg Luxick was our concept. You know her. She's wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
And we've had a lot of really strong independent candidates and candidates within actually even the Democrat Party, a few, but the Republican Party, who are absolutely committed to what they believe in. And we've also had our fair share of people who are willing to go along to get along so that when they get there, they'll be able to do something. When they don't seem to realize the only chance an independent or somebody who is not part of that two-party system, the two sides of the same major party coin, of getting in is by presenting something different. Just you know, going along with the flow doesn't distinguish you in any way from a mainstream Democrat or Republican who are, boy, hard to distinguish a lot of the time themselves. So I'm just wondering, and I'm not suggesting this is a really good thing, but I'm kind of known as a word guy, usually way too wordy, as you can tell, but sometimes it's short and not necessarily too sweet. If this fella is really just trying to be a politician and get elected so he can then do some good after he's already compromised himself, his name is Panky. It just suggests itself, Hanky Panky.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to do it. I couldn't resist.
This is
Robert is now able to hear us, by the way.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
This is Randy.
Yeah, I can hear everybody now.
Yeah.
It's kind of odd, but go ahead, Randy. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you know, I just want to make a comment on that because that's one of the things when people ask what distinguishes you from the two major parties, this is one of those specific areas that separates us from the two major parties is we have the will to hold people accountable. I'm not only am I the national vice chairman of the party, but I'm also the chairman of the party here in Illinois. And I took that reign back in March where we were holding our state convention. And we have a 22-page candidate screening form, and we expect our candidates to fill that screening form out because we want to know how you stand on the issues. And I told every single one of them that when you fill this out, you are personally representing yourself to me. And if somewhere down the road you say that right now that you're pro-life, and somewhere down the road you start doing something other than pro-life, I am personally coming after you to take you out. And I don't mean, you know, physically necessarily, but, you know, politically to move this party to absolutely take you out because we expect the people that say, you know, how they believe to uphold those beliefs. We expect our candidates who say they uphold the Constitution to actually uphold the Constitution. And so this is one of the single biggest delineations of all of the other parties is the fact that we have a platform and our platform matters and we expect our candidates to uphold that platform or they will not be our candidates. Now, part of the problem, though, is as being experienced is sometimes we have to fight state legislature to hold people accountable in our own party. So like there was an issue in Missouri where there was a candidate that didn't uphold some of the party principles. And I tell you, it took a little bit, but they finally got it, said, look, you're not one of our candidates. And so, you know, I think that's really important for people to understand. If you want to start taking back our country, we have to have a relative expectancy that when people say they believe a certain way, that they walk the talk.
Right.
You know, that's excellent. And by the way, I really appreciated your qualification. You're not necessarily going to take them out personally, but you know, they say that independents can't win. In a borough not far from here, we have an elected libertarian on a council. In my township, we elected a guy. He happens to be Republican Party. He could have been Democrat. It doesn't matter. He is for the Pennsylvania and the U.S. Constitution, and he's holding firm. And I expect him to hold firm. If he doesn't, he won't be our candidate. You know, at one time in this country, and I'm old enough at 53 to remember it. Democrats once put forward elected patriots, and they elected patriots, and true liberals, I mean honest liberals, classical liberals. Republicans once put forward and elected patriots who were true conservatives, but now they'll fight tooth and nail to prevent patriots and constitutionalists from whatever party, from even getting on the ballot. Here in Pennsylvania, the hurdles for somebody who is not a major party candidate are just tremendously bad. A couple of the guests that we've had on our show have been knocked off the ballot. Bob Gazzardi was a Republican. Ken Krawchuk, who is a libertarian, and Paul Glover, who is a Green Party guy, all honest guys. I don't 100% agree with them, but I know they're honest and they believe in the Constitution. They're no longer running for governor in this state. They can't because the system is geared against them. In Idaho, in Illinois, the places that you guys are from, how difficult is it for a third-party candidate to get on the ballot compared to a major party candidate?
Well, I can tell you that we in Illinois are very similar, actually, to what goes on there in Pennsylvania. It's very parallel, actually. Here in Illinois, the Republicans and Democrats only need 5,000 signatures to run their gubernatorial candidate. A new party, which there's only two delineations, either you're an established party or you're trying to become established party, so you're known as a new party. And when our signature requirements are 25,000 signatures, we delivered this time a little over 31,000 signatures. And what's interesting about that number is, you know, that's 6,000 signatures, which is 1,000 more than the Republicans need to qualify on, you know, for the ballot. We've got to get 25,000. Well, the Republicans, they had objected to 20,000 of our signatures. And so we did not survive the signature challenge, but we are possibly going to be filing a lawsuit. The Green Party has already done so. In fact, they decided not to fight it at the signature level. They went straight for the lawsuit. And I'm wondering if maybe that might have should have been the what direction that we went initially, because we're a little bit behind the power curve in getting a lawsuit filed. And so, but, you know, the thing of it is, and here's the bizarre thing. I mean, I've been holding conversations across Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, you name it. I'm holding these conversations, and everybody is sick, absolutely sick and tired of the Republican and Democrat parties. They're just absolutely tired of it. But when you say, hey, look, I've got an alternative choice for you, they're like, oh, well, you can't win. You're going to split the vote. You know, come up with all this garbage. It's like, look, pull your head out of your proverbial rear end. You're telling me you hate it, but yet you're going to stick there because you want to win. And my response was like, look, I'm not here to quote-unquote win. If I wanted to win, I'd just sit around playing tiddlywinks or doing something to win. I'm not here to win. I'm here to change this country. And if you'll join me, we can do this. And the single most important concept that people need to understand, if you want to change this country, the single biggest concept that made this country great is one word. It's called competition. Competition is why we get the best product for the best price. And when you have government controls, when you have monopolies, you have duopolies and all of that, then you no longer get the best product for the best price. You get the controlled substance shoved down your throat. And so if people want to take back this country, then, you know, they've got to understand we need competition in the political arena just like we do down the halls of Walmart. And people, you know, and here's the one last thing, and I'll wrap up with this, is that, you know, you go to, and we got our closest supermarket is the Walmart. They have a grocery store, and they have one entire complete aisle full of hundreds of different boxes of cereal. Now, I get people telling me, Randy, if we have too many candidates in the thing, people will be confused and won't know what to do. And so they just won't show up to vote. I'm like, hold the phone. You go to Walmart where there's hundreds of boxes of cereal. People are going to be confused because you know they don't read the labels. They're too lazy to read the labels to understand what that's actually in that box of cereal. But let me tell you, I watch them walk down the aisle and pick out cereal. They're not afraid to go down there and pick out a box of cereal. So to tell me to flood the market with candidates is going to keep people from voting and they'll be too confused. It's like, let's try it for a change. Let's give people some choices, you know? And so
you know,
these excuses are just tremendous.
I have absolutely none of us. Have absolutely any problem hearing you. I think that you don't even need a radio or a computer. And I am grinning, sir.
You're very passionate. I remember that, Gunny.
You are an epic, epic ranter, and it makes perfect sense. My God, are you running for office? You need to run for office.
I have run for governor as a write-in candidate, and here in Illinois I got 20,000 officially recorded votes, the record holder for write-in votes. And in 2010, I ran for U.S. Senate, where the Republican Party spent nearly $250,000 to keep me off the ballot and did so by only about 65 signatures.
That's beautiful. You're getting closer. Here in Pennsylvania, just recently, we had a write-in candidate set a precedent. Never happened before, ever. With a write-in candidate is now a state senator. And, you know, there comes a time where there's a sea change happening. There used to be a Whig party. It's gone. There used to be a know-nothing party. It's gone. There used to be parties that made sense in this country. Now, I'm not suggesting the Democrats or the Republicans are going to go the way of the Whigs, but if nothing else, we're forcing them to face these issues and exposing their hypocrisy. And I'll tell you what, you're going to break through. I have a feeling based on lots and lots of experience with candidates, the one thing that most of these really decent candidates who have commitment, who have thought things through, who are articulate, who understand the issues, who are honest, the thing that most of them lack is the ability to really rally people and rouse them. You got that. Now, I don't know how you look in person. Like I said, right now I'm grinning, and I probably look like a complete idiot with a big grin on my face, but it translates really, really well. It's to hear somebody who feels this, who can shout that out. I mean, get out there and preach it, brother.
Oh, brother, I do. And if you're interested to see what I look like, I have a perpetual website, runrandyrun.com. I keep that just in case I decide to run for office again. I have a personal
website.
I'm on Facebook. In fact, my moniker, you can ask Robert, is Randy Constitutional Evangelist Stufflebeam.
I'm finding you now. There you are.
But yeah, in fact, there's a Delicatessa who's online, and I used to be on, and actually you normally have done broadcasting myself in the past, a broadcast called Constitutionally Correct. It's I got derailed when I went on a documentary regarding illegal immigration where they flew me down to El Salvador and followed the immigrant trail all the way up through southern Mexico, central Mexico, and then crossed the border into the United States, and it
That's
was
you.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, I got the connection. Yeah, you've made a lot of waves already. This is awesome.
I am a good wave maker.
All right, I've used this analogy before for those out there who are depressed, who are frustrated, who are feeling like we're not getting anywhere, like the other side's doing things. I've used this analogy. I don't know if I've done it on radio, and I hope it translates. I used to be an athlete. I used to surf and body surf. I swam. I ran. I did all this great mountain climbing. I'm an old cripple guy now. But imagine if you've ever even just body surfed a wave. They come in cycles, And it's a long time between those big waves. And if you've got a sense for the rhythm of things, what you do is you swim way, way, way out from the shore. You're way away from comfort, and you can't tell where the bottom is, and there's not a lot of people around you, if anybody. And the lifeguards are blowing their whistles and waving at you, and everybody thinks you're going to drown. And you're just treading water, waiting. And you feel the wave lifting you and dropping you and lifting you and dropping you. You're just waiting for that big one that you know is coming. And if you've got the good sense, if you've been paying close attention, there is a cycle to this. And that wave starts coming in, and that's where people start paddling like hell to try and catch that wave. You try and match the speed of that wave as it builds, as it reaches the shoreline, and the ground rises up, causing that wave to rise up. Now, you're moving, and you're in this giant, powerful movement. And the trick, and it is actually a skill, is to maneuver and position yourself so you're not behind the wave, because then it just passes you by.
Right.
And you're not in the middle of the wave. Because if you're in the middle of that wave, you're going to wipe out. It's going to slam you headfirst into the bottom. You'll break your neck. It's called the washing machine. It's a bad place to be. You want to be just slightly ahead of that wave. And as soon as you get there, you stop paddling, and you just make sure that you're making little corrective movements to stay there. And if you get that, you and many, many other patriots who have agreed that they're willing to take that risk and get out there and lead are going to ride that wave, and we're going to take this country back. I'm convinced of it. We're going to take this country back, and we're not returning it to some bygone mythical era that never was. America's never been perfect, and it never will, but we're going to bring it closer to the ideals of our founders, to that shining city on a hill that ever was. And I'm convinced that if the principles of the Constitution Party are adopted by whatever party or candidate, if we adopt this nationally and in Idaho and in Ohio and in Illinois and in Pennsylvania and locally in our municipalities and townships and unleash the people, we have the potential to restore prosperity, American greatness, American strength, American creativity in a way that will astound the world. They look upon us as this old, sick, shuffling, corrupt country, which we are. And they're going to see just how fast liberty brings us back, and it will.
You're making me cry here.
Well, you make me grin, I make you cry. It's kind of an emotional time we're having tonight.
And with that, and with that emotionalism or Bart's logic, I'm going to bring it over to you, Floyd.
What for? I'm listening.
Okay. Well,
we're doing okay.
I do see it's about 10 minutes to the top of the hour, and I just want to briefly talk about some upcoming shows that we have coming on. Today we have a special night where we're doing a show, but however, it's going to be a rebroadcast of the show. I was introduced a couple of weeks ago to Althea Shaw, and her nephew was killed by a gangbanger that's also an illegal immigrant. And so they have a show on Blog Talk Radio as well. And so tomorrow night, for those who want to hear more about that, we will be doing a rebroadcast of this past Sunday night's show that they had here on Bard's Logic. It'll be at the regular time at 10 p.m. So it will be us. It'll just be a rebroadcast of their show. So go ahead and check that out tomorrow at 10 p.m. And then on the 20th, we have the founder of Oath Keepers, Steve Rhodes. He'll be coming on the show on the 20th of August. And then on the 27th, we will have Charles Strange, who is the father of Michael Strange, who is one of the members of the SEAL Team 6 that, of course, is renowned for getting Osama bin Laden and then later on their helicopter being shot down in Afghanistan, and a lot of questions surrounding that event. So we'll have Mr. Charles Strange on to tell us about his efforts to bring out the truth about what happened with SEAL Team 6, and that will be on August the 27th. Thank you, gentlemen.
I just want to mention
passing,
very quickly about Charles Strange. The NSA, because of the push that he put through to try and get the truth about our finest warriors who were destroyed, well, his story, he'll tell it himself, but the NSA bugged his house, and he sued the NSA in federal court, and he's the only person to date in this country who's been able to successfully sue the NSA and win. I'm telling you, it's coming to a head now. Everything that they're to show that they're in power, the people who want to be our rulers, is like the Wizard of Oz. It's like the behind the curtain. It's just some pitiful little old guy who, it happens to be an old white guy like me, but some pitiful little, and Althea Shaw is a proud black Los Angeles, and she's with us. It has nothing to do with that. It's just a guy who has the levers of power to make it appear that he has the power, but he doesn't have the power. I guarantee you, those people out there who are afraid, oh, it's going to come to violence, we're going to lose, it's going to be civil war, I dare a federal establishment to attempt that in Idaho. That would be a terrible mistake. There are many armed patriots in Idaho, but Idaho is sparsely populated and mountainous. I dare them to do it in Illinois or in Ohio. Midwestern states, and Illinois has some pretty strong gun regulations, but there's patriots there, and a lot of them, and I double dare them to try that in Pennsylvania, where we have, as just deer hunters in this state, more armed, mostly veterans, high-powered, experienced, responsible, sane, very calm citizens who obey the law, who will protect their homes and families. So, friends, they're not going to do it. They can't do it. They won't do it. They'd be fools to do it, and they're not fools. What they are going to do is try and scare us and make us back down. They're going to try and make sure that we don't vote in the elections. They're going to try and make sure that you don't have good choices when you go to vote in the elections, that instead of voting for 2, 3, 5 different candidates who express different views, who are honest, who you can really look at the issues and say, which one is the one I think is closest to my beliefs. That's a legitimate election. I will accept the outcome of that election, even if the one who wins is not the one who is closest to my views. But I will not accept this false choice of the evil of two lessers, where we have somebody who is giving lip service to the constitutional for the D's and lip service to the R's, and then in between election cycles, they completely gut all the protections for our individual liberties, our rights that were given by God, and we let him have a pass. Well, we're not doing that anymore. And I am monopolizing the mic, so back to whoever.
Well, no, that's fine, Dan. So I did have a question for Randy about the November 15th and 16th National Committee meeting here in Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm really excited about it, looking forward to it. I'm sure it'll be here before you know it. So I believe Floyd said also that the last committee meeting that was held was after the election. Now, is that something that had forethought to it, or is it that just the way the dates fell?
A little bit of both. Some of that has to do with, you know, because as – well, you're going to have the luxury of being right there, and you don't have to travel very far. But, you know, some people, like Floyd, if he's going to make it, have to travel quite a big distance. And the thing is, what happens is, and this is part of the argument, I mean, and I say argument, it's part of the discussion when we're holding it at these important meetings, is that, okay, this candidate wants to pour all of his heart, soul, and money into his campaign, and if he's got to stop in the middle of that to go attend a national committee meeting, that right now, you know, the politics are not necessarily quote unquote national so much as they are the state politics. So, you know, part of that has to do with the fact that we want these candidates there in the fight where they need to be, and allows them to do so. And so that's part of the discussion. Sometimes is a little bit, you know, has to do with when things are available too.
That makes logical sense. And since we're on the topic of, you know, the elections, Do you have off the top of your head, or you may have in front of you, how many candidates you have running this year for 2014?
You know, that number has been increasing. The last number I think that I saw our chairman post out there was about 150 candidates nationwide running for office.
Correct.
Now, did you say statewide or are you talking about nationwide?
Well, nationwide, across all the states, there's about 150 total candidates. And that's actually a pretty significant number from what we've had in the past.
Right.
Yes, yeah, certainly. It's good to hear. Well, if you know of any who'd like to come on the show, I know, as I said, November will be here for you. You know it, just have them email me at bardslogic@gmail.com, and we'll get them on here on the show.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, you're certainly a friend to liberty, and I know, you know, that from your perspective, you know, you're not necessarily a member of the party, but it's certainly a friend of the party, and I appreciate that.
Oh, no problem. We definitely had, you know, Constitutional Party candidates, including Virgil Good, on, you know, during the 2012 election. I tell you what, and I got the chance to meet Virgil and have lunch with him and have some conversations with him, and he was a salt of the earth guy, and, you know, and now that it's passed, I don't, you know, mind saying it. You know, I voted for him in Ohio. He's on the Ohio ballot, so colored in the box for Virgil, and I tell you what, I really wish he could have made it any bit better than any of the other two that was on the ballot, that's for sure.
Yeah.
This is Dan Gray in Pennsylvania, and in the interest of full disclosure, I just want to let you know, although I'm currently registered Republican because we had a primary and I wanted to vote in the primary, Constitution Party is my home. I was and will be re-registering Constitution Party. I don't pick by parties. I pick by individuals who are running for office. I'll vote for whoever it is, no matter what their party is, if they're the right person. However, of all the major parties, and I include Constitution, Libertarian, and the rest of them, and I have no objection to them, the other ones. They're fine and they're good choices. But of all of them, Constitution Party is closest to what I believe in because it is the one that says the Constitution is the law of the land, as it is, as it was intended, first and foremost. That means that if you don't agree with social conservatism, for instance, where I'm somewhat on one side, somewhat on the other, if you're somebody who doesn't favor a specific policy, under the Constitution, most of that's not the federal government's business to begin with, which means that Idaho does not have to be identical to Illinois. Illinois does not have to do things the way Pennsylvania does. We just have to do things in a constitutional manner. And by the way, folks, I would urge you to take a little bit of time and go online. I'm sure you can find it to whatever your state, Department of State or whatever they call it in your state website is, and find the constitution of your own state and open your eyes, because it's not just the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution Party in each state agrees to support the Constitution of that state, something that we don't do in here in Pennsylvania. Our Constitution here has it's a thick booklet. Okay, I've got it in front of me, and it's full of all kinds of really interesting things. But Article 1, part of our Constitution, says you cannot rewrite Article 1. You can't touch it. Article 1 is the original Constitution of the state of Pennsylvania. It's never been rescinded. It's never been amended but one time. It was written by William Penn. It was rewritten by Benjamin Franklin. You can't get better than that. And we just absolutely ignore it. It says free and fair elections. It's a one sentence. I'm not going to pull it out right now, and we don't have those because we have similar rules that Illinois has, where it's impossible, almost impossible, to get on the ballot unless you're endorsed by the major party. We have Second Amendment. We have all kinds of others. Our gun protection, our gun rights protection clause in the first Article 1, Section 21 of the Pennsylvania Constitution is better than any other state, and it's better than the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, and we don't follow it. All we need to do to fix things is to follow the basic rules, get rid of all these layers and layers and layers of bureaucracy and rules and control by bureaucrats that don't know any better than we do how to run our own lives and who take all our money away, and let the people decide what they want to do. And some of them will fail, and some of them will make bad decisions. And if they're not hurting anybody else, and here I'm sounding a little bit like a libertarian, but if they're not actually committing harm to somebody else, what harm is there in allowing them to fail? Because if they don't have the risk of failure, they also never have the opportunity to succeed. And frankly, whether I ever have a business again or not, I need other people who have that bold vision to start things, who want to grow things. I want them to go out there. This country used to be strong. We didn't need all these social benefits and social programs. $2 trillion, folks, spent in the last fiscal year, borrowed money from your grandchildren just for benefits and entitlements, trillion with a T. And we wouldn't need those things if we had a rising tide of prosperity, which is going to be only produced by a rising tide of liberty. That's all. Our guests are fighting for that. We're not fighting for control. We want to give you back the control of your own lives so you can run them as you see fit without having to worry. When you're driving down the road and you see a police officer, you should think, this is a fellow or a lady who, if I have a problem, he or she will be able to help me. That if somebody is trying to run me off the road, somebody who is driving around a school bus at 60 miles an hour, this is the person who's going to step in and help. This is the person who's going to go catch the murderer and the rapist and the one who's pushing drugs to our kids. You don't need to be looking in your rearview mirror, see a marked car and go, oh, my God, they're going to stop me for something, and I'm going to be in trouble. That's where we're at now. I'm sorry. I get on rants, too. You know, it's just...
That's okay. It's great to have you on the show, Dan, every week, and you know, and we really love your contributions to the show, really do. Because, of course, you know, Bard's Logic is the grassroots, we the people show, and so you know, we try to keep people to get as much off their chest as they can when they're talking. I try not to put some time limits on, but of course, I like to do our roundtable discussion and get other folks. And sit here and talk about. Still register Republican. I don't know if I register or not, but I know the last primary I voted in, I actually, you know, when you go to the ballot and they say what party you want to get, you know, the ballot for to vote on this time around, I voted for, or I took a Green Party ballot because I want to give the person on there an opportunity to try to get on in the general election. So, you know, I did it that way. I'm, you know, principal of a party, and I do think that, you know, of course, you know, the folks here know, you know, with being environmentalists, I'm going to say conservationists, either way, some of the tenets of the Green Party I do agree with. And I definitely think that the candidate on the Green Party had just as much of a right to get on the ballot as Republican and Democrat. So I took the Green Party ballot and voted that way in this past primary election.
Hey, Robert. This is Randy, and something that you guys may or may not know is that I am on the board of directors for the organization called Free and Equal.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely believe in that. Like I said, I believe in competition. Competition, you know, there is no real choice. And so I believe it to the point that, you know, I believe the Green Party should be on there, even though I'm almost diametrically opposed to just about everything the Green Party stands for. But they have the right to be there. And, you know, just like Pennsylvania, Illinois has in its constitution that all elections shall be free and equal. And I'm telling you, how does 25,000 equal 5,000? It must be that new Common Core math, maybe. I don't know. You know, as long as you're thinking about it, I guess it applies. But, you know, the
you
thing...
You just made me push scotch out my nose.
Did you say Scotch?
Yeah, well, yeah.
I need to give me some more. I need to give me some more Jameson.
Yeah, but you know what you said is just absolutely right. That you know we have got to have a level playing field. People are waking up to it, you know, and I'm really thrilled about that. But at the same time, it's you know I'm a retired Marine, and it's hard not to want to punch some people, you know.
Yes, I absolutely know that feeling.
Speaking of free and equal, I know we covered the debates. I believe it had four folks on there. It had Virgil Good on there, Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, and Gary Johnson, during the debate. And then, you know, they filtered us through. They only have it between two folks. So I remember we did cover the first round of those debates, and we also had Christina Tobin. She's still with, from my understanding, Free and Equal, correct?
Yep, sure is.
And
yeah,
for the national committee meeting in fall, someone else we used to, you know, talk at least a lot of heavy of his clips with Reality Check. Ben Swan is going to be there, from my understanding.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yep, I was just going to say that you know, we have secured Ben Swan to be one of our guest speakers there.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll be looking forward to it. I'm going to give a call out to Don Schrader and talk with him about, you know, see about doing a show there or, you know, something of that nature.
Yeah, absolutely. That will be – it'll be great to meet you there.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a lot of folks who we've had you guys on the show. It would be great to have you on. And then I know Free Equals still, you know, they're still working on having, you know, their concert and their big fair that they've been working on. I know 1 year was supposed to be October. Unfortunately, I couldn't get away from work to be able to go. So,
you know, there's just one other thing about the, you know, the people, the reservations that people have. And, you know, stretching out from the two major parties, which, you know, everybody knows currently they do have the power, and it must be recognized. But I want to tell you a little story of something that I discovered a couple of years ago. And the United States had put out a head reward for this capture of this guy. And I'm just going to say Muhammad. I don't remember what his name was, but they put out a $500,000 reward for Muhammad. Well, apparently Pakistan had found the guy, captured him, and held him captive for about 3 or 4 months before they ever let the United States know that he was captured. And then once the United States had finally got a hold of him, it was about 14 months before anybody else knew it. Now, it just so happens that this guy Muhammad was a Canadian citizen, and when the Canadians found out, they were furious, because you know the Geneva Convention says that when you capture somebody, you must immediately let their nation, their country, know that you have captured one of their citizens. And so what happened was they were trying. The United States wanted to. Were to transfer the guy back to the United States. Anyway, they were trying to get him back to the United States. But Canada says, oh, I don't even think so. You're going to transfer that guy to Canada. He's our citizen. You guys have captured him, tortured him, violated his human rights for almost 2 years, and we are going to uphold this guy's rights. So Canada does extradite him to Canada. He gets to Canada, and the U.S. is still wants this guy. They're trying to get him extradited to the United States where they can interrogate him some more. And so they went before the Canadian Supreme Court. And in the Canadian Supreme Court, they rendered a decision, and I actually have the quote somewhere on my website. But this quote is so important to understand. What they said was, in this decision to deny the United States to have extradition rights to this guy Muhammad, they said that while it seemed that for a time terrorism wins, if we do not uphold the law, then terrorism ultimately wins. And I thought this was absolutely brilliant. It was a quote that the United States should have been responsible for, not being responsible for the law. And, you know, I want to make the correlation to people having the courage to step outside the two-party duopoly and have the courage to join with a new party, a third party, the Constitution Party, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, and God forbid the Socialist Party. Whatever it happens to be, their political ideology, step out of that two-party duopoly. Because I'll quote and paraphrase a little bit what the judge said, that even though it may seem that evil has an opportunity to win because your guy's not being elected, right? So even though it may seem that evil for a time wins, if we do not step outside the two-party duopoly, ultimately evil will win. People have to come outside that two-party duopoly and, you know, step outside and have the courage, understanding that, yeah, you know, you may have to step outside your comfort zone of voting for the lesser of two evils. But if you will start having the courage to vote for those who are, you know, represent your values and represent your political ideology, ultimately, we will win, but it takes courage for a time.
You know, you mentioned the word duopoly, and I'm a big fan of words that have lots of syllables or are Greek or Latin in origin. I like to use Shakespeare. And I think I want to boil it down, though, for those listeners of us out there who are maybe not as erudite. They haven't studied as much. Doesn't mean they're not as smart. They certainly know what they know, and they probably know enough. And if you're of a certain age, if you're a baby boomer, okay, I'll speak to the millennials in a moment, but if you're a baby boomer, it's the man. It's the establishment. It's the power. Remember Fight the Power? Back then, we thought that the danger was from the right, as if Nixon was on the right. But we thought that it was the conservatives. But they weren't really conservatives. They just called themselves that and wore suits and ties. So we were all hippies, and not all of us, but, you know, a lot of us were hippies and yuppies, and we're sort of fighting to do things differently. And we were right to do that. But the so-called left, and they're not liberals either, they're really just the other side of that coin, they took advantage of that because we weren't sophisticated. And they used that impetus to clean American society up, to clean our government up, to make it worse. Now, it's still the same fight, folks, that feeling that you had when you were a kid that these guys are just lying to us, that these guys are taking advantage of us, that they don't care at all about us, and that they're going to hurt us any chance they get just because they enjoy the feeling of having power over somebody. Those feelings are absolutely legitimate. I want you to rediscover those feelings and ask yourself. Now, if you're on the side of the Constitution already, great. Go out and talk to your friends and family who are of that certain age and say, don't you remember what it was like to fight the establishment, to insist on freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of worship, freedom from unreasonable searches and seizures? Do you remember that? Well, it's still valid, and the difference is we're not unsophisticated now, we're not inexperienced now, and even though we're a lot poorer than we thought we'd be at this point, the vast majority of wealth in this country is still held by that baby boom generation, and this is our chance to make what we messed up right. And as far as the millennials, and I have a daughter who just turned 21, you guys, everybody despairs of you. Everybody says that you're lazy and you've been fooled your whole life and you don't have any idea what's true and all you're interested in is reality shows and you know, all this stuff on the internet. And the fact is, you remind me of a generation of Americans that they called the lost generation. a generation that had been subject to wars that we really didn't belong in, that we didn't feel right in fighting, that we lost the peace after we won the war, that political considerations among corrupt groups took away all the sacrifices that were made by this generation back in the 20s. And then in the 20s, they experienced a bubble where everybody, where people who sold newspapers, cab drivers, people who shined shoes, maids, ordinary folks, people who flipped burgers for a living, were involved in the stock market. It was a huge bubble, and it was all corrupt, and the bubble burst, and everybody was poor. And we're just on the verge of that right now. And these people, they somehow matured, and they made it through the Depression, the Great Depression, the one that makes what's happening now look like nothing, the one that we're going to face soon that's going to be maybe worse than that. And then these people, they took on fascism and tyranny and worldwide, and they defeated incredibly powerful armies. And at home, they beat those armies with sacrifice and with hard work, and women entered the workforce. I mean, it was really a good time, and these people did everything right. They were the lost generation that became the greatest generation. The only mistake those folks make, and I hope that someday you kids, and I'm old enough to call you kids, even though you're adults now, the mistake they made was in taking it too easy on their kids, on my generation, the baby boomers. These things do come in cycles and in waves. They did not want us to suffer the way they had. But that suffering is what built character. And some of us, I was lucky, my grandparents were more, they did more than my parents did to make sure that I had character, because they made me work. And they made my parents keep me on that straight and narrow, okay? And I messed up plenty. I smoked dope, and I did all that stupid stuff. And you are doing some stupid stuff now. And, you know, okay, I don't care if you got a tattoo. I don't care if you got a piercing. I don't care how you wear your hair. I think it's stupid if you wear your pants down below your behind. But it's a fashion. It doesn't matter. What matters to me is that your people who are rebellious because of your age, and that goes in cycles too, every generation's like that, but you're rebellious against something that's different, something that's almost unique. You've never been told the truth by almost any establishment authority figure. Almost every single one of them, whether it was in the Girl Scouts, and I'm not talking about your local leaders. You may have had a good local Boy Scout or Girl Scout leader. You may know a good local pastor or a good local politician. You may know a good person in authority, a teacher, but the big bosses across the board, there's no good ones, none. And there haven't been your whole life. So your BS detectors are so finely honed that all you have to get is a whiff of one molecule of that BS, and you just automatically know those people are lying. And there's something else that's unique about your generation, you millennials, something beautiful. I've never seen a more supportive and decent group of young people than I see today. And I know there's some thugs among you, just like there are among every group, but for the most part, you hug each other. You actually care about each other. You're decent to each other. You don't accept in your own circle people being nasty to each other or nasty to other people. So I commend you. And listen, we messed up, us old folks, but we're going to get back on track. But we can't do this, even with the resources and the experience we have. We can't do this without you. And you need to do this, because this is your future. Another couple of decades, if I'm lucky and someone doesn't shoot me first,
if you want
not
to say
that. Politics, folks. I'm not worried. God will take me when he does. But it was a joke. But decades, and we will be gone, and it's going to be your world, and you're going to be in your 30s and your 40s, and you're going to be looking out there, and you're either going to be masters of your own fate, captains of your own soul. You're either going to be running your lives the way you want, maybe having some more prosperity, some more success, a lot more freedom, doing what you feel like your way with your family, or you're going to be slaves. And your children, they're not even going to have a hint of what freedom's about. This is it. This is your chance. And if you don't take it, and if we don't take it together, there won't be anything left. But don't be depressed, because I'm convinced we can win, and we will win.
And let me just add to that you know, that's kind of what I think all of us here are all about, you know, to that I am going to give them every chance and every opportunity that I have the power to give them. And I have dedicated my life, and my wife has joined me in this dedication to do the things that are necessary to preserve freedom for our future generations.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, that's what we're here for. We're here to give those sorts of things to our children and grandchildren. That used to be, from my understanding, called our prosperity. But I do want to bring in some folks. If you'd like to chime in to the show, just give us a call at 347-945-7428, and we'll get you into our roundtable discussion. And speaking of that, soon we got somebody just called in. I believe that is our friend James and Kelly. It looks like they chimed in at the same time. So what we'll do is we'll bring in Kelly because he's been on hold longer, and then we'll bring in James. And for anyone else who'd like to chime in, go ahead at 347-945-7428. And Floyd, if you also would like to chime in after bringing the two guys in, go ahead. And then also, if there's anyone there at the fair who would like to make some comments on the line, either about what they thought their thoughts are on the state of the nation or in their support of the Constitution Party, bring them on as well. But without any further ado, we will bring in our constitutional scholar, and that is Kelly Mordecai. Of course, also we know him as the author to the Hidden Fourth Branch. Go ahead, Kelly.
Well, hey, good to talk to you all. I'm calling you from burning FEMA Region 9 here in Siskiyou County. We got a whole bunch of fires, and it's really smoky. We had firefighters from all over the country, and now I can finally see the mountains again. Let's see here. Oh, you know, Roger, or Robert, I'm getting a little disappointed. I don't know if I want to come to this roundtable discussion anymore because where's my pizza? Where's my pizza?
Where's your pizza?
Where's my pizza?
I'm we have to start serving pizza here.
Yeah.
Pepperoni and jalapenos.
So, yeah. So we're talking about preserving our nation, and I've been studying more curiously about the grand jury and the history. I've been asked to appear before a federal grand jury by somebody who has witnessed chronic prosecutorial misconduct and misconduct by the FDA. The guy's facing 37 years, but we might be lucky to put the government people behind bars for the way they, I don't want to say framed it, but they really exaggerated the case. And so I've been discovering, you know, our founders have set up a system which, you know, I've talked about the fourth branch being the grand jury, which, and by the way, you study the Constitution and the grand jury, you get into history real quick, and it's just so beyond fascinating. But anyway, I found a charge. By the way, John Jay did a really good charge. He basically said to the, well, there's three charges to grand juries, and he basically was saying, look, it's your job to hold government accountable. He said to one of them, he did one in 1777 when New York was a state. He did four to, it was Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and New York in 1790, and another one in 1793. And one of these, he said, do not let corruptions or basically bad government officials, do not let their actions go unnoticed. You will present them. And so under the power of presentment, we have a lot of power. It hasn't been used because the Department of Justice or Department of Injustice has taken over. I found that they have to sign the indictment, or so they claim. So if Eric Holder directs the USA to not sign an indictment, do you know what that means? Under the Fifth Amendment protects them, they can get away with murder like Ted Kennedy did. So I'm discovering these things, and it's kind of frightening how the Justice Department has taken over, and they have supposedly good arguments to protect the executive branch. I actually written a paper about it. I'm about to release it, but it's just stunning. Now, we go into the history of our country, you'll find a different position where John Jay and so many other judges knew of the grand jury to investigate offenses against the laws of the United States. And, you know, again, this is back to the people looking at and monitoring our government instead of the AG as the fox that guards the hen house. So I want to read you a quote from Judge William Goforth of the Northwest Territory in 1795. This is stunning. Okay, it's complete reverse where what our thinking is today. He charged the grand jury, and he said this: "As this is a point of law in which the rights of man are deeply interested, I shall detain you one more minute longer. Suppose this territory was to be honored with a visit from our illustrious and well-beloved President George Washington, who is known to have a soul elevated above all that is mean. Nevertheless, as he is human, and it is the lot of humanity to err, suppose he should fall beneath himself as to strike, beat, wound, and commit a violent battery on the body of a poor citizen. While you were sitting and within your knowledge, would it not be your duty to make a presentment? Certainly it would. If you did not, he might pity you as men, but as cowards, he would despise you." Isn't that stunning?
It is.
We have gone such a 180 because of the way the system has been manipulated by the Injustice Department. It's just, you know, Trey Gowdy is screaming, independent prosecution regarding Benghazi. Senator Ted Cruz is saying, independent prosecution regarding the IRS scandal. It's like, yeah, that's what it used to be because the Justice Department didn't even exist until 1870. Did you know the Attorney General is not even mentioned in the 1787 Constitution, nor is it in the Fifth Amendment where the grand jury indictment requirement comes from? Isn't this fascinating?
Certainly fascinating.
So what I'm saying here,
I have a question for you. Real quick, Kelly, if you comprised a grand jury, if you put one together, convened one, I guess is the right word.
Oh, I can't do it because I'm not a judge.
All right, so it nearly requires a judge. If a judge convenes a grand jury, and that grand jury hears testimony presented by whoever it happens to be, it doesn't have to be a prosecutor from what you're telling me, then that grand jury can indict anybody they want to on any breach of law in their jurisdiction. Is that correct?
Actually, the president is immune, but they can issue a presentment, which is a finding of facts. The judge can take that presentment and take it to Congress, and Congress can remove the president. And that's what happened in the Nixon situation. The grand jury turned their matter over to, and back then you had good Justice Department people, but you it turned it over to Congress. And Congress, the House Judiciary Committee, voted in terms of impeachment.
Well, what if it wasn't a president? What if it was a cabinet member or a former cabinet member like Lois Lerner or Eric the Red Holder? If they were indicted
or the other part,
accused
the Red
of
Holder.
Crime officially, thank you. What would happen? Would there be any – I don't understand. What would be the next step? Would the law enforcement authorities be bound to go and actually arrest that person? Where would they be held? Where would a trial be held?
Okay, well, the whole theme of a grand jury is probable cause. So then you have, let's say you got an indictment because a judge appointed independent counsel to prepare the indictment. So the indictment goes to the judge. The judge can turn it into an arrest warrant, probable cause arrest warrant. So the person gets arrested and then they're sent to trial. Now here's the other scary thing, is according to United States or Smith versus U.S. Supposedly, only an attorney from the Attorney General's office can prosecute the case in trial, which means what? Again, we have to have independent prosecution. This actually happened in the Nixon era, where several of the AGs, John Mitchell is one of them, resigned, who was later indicted, by the way. And then another AG, and then finally Congress got the Attorney General to appoint independent prosecution. That
Archibald
independent
prosecution. Yeah.
Yeah. That prosecution requested a subpoena, and then it was fought again. You know, as a subpoena ducis tecum, which means show up with the evidence, not just the evidence, but show up with it. And this was going to be going to trial regarding the Watergate boys who were being tried. So the president said, no, can't do that. And the U.S. Supreme Court, under certiorari, which is kind of emergency, said, yeah, President, you will provide this evidence. And Nixon resigned. You know, at the same time, the House Judiciary Committee had that information from the grand jury. And Nixon saw the cards stacked so much against him, he resigned.
Wow.
So, yeah, but with the way the system is now, Congress is going to have to somehow get independent counsel and independent prosecution for an indictment, but the grand jury can still do a presentment. And they can do it of their own. There's a case, it was U.S. versus Cox in 65, where a judge was approached by the grand jury foreman and said, hey, you know, this USA from the Department of Justice, he ain't going to write the indictment. What? The judge says, all right, you get in here, Mr. USA. And so what's going on here? And the judge, and they says, well, yeah, it's regarding some perjury, but I called the Attorney General's office in Washington, D.C., and they said, do not prepare the indictment, do not sign it. The judge says, you know, I'm going to give you half an hour to think about that. You better come back to my court and give me a good answer. So he calls the AG, Attorney General Kawaskowski or something, I can't pronounce his name, the active AG, came back in court 30 minutes later, and this USA said, well, talk to the AG, ain't going to do it. The judge says, all right, U.S. Marshal will arrest him and put him in the county jail. Contempt. Well, the Justice Department sued the judge, Judge E. Harold Cox, Cox, C-O-X, and he, in appeal, the judge is judging the judge, overturned and basically affirmed, or so they said in their opinion, that a grand jury indictment without the signature of a United States attorney is invalid. And it's like, what? This opened the door wide open for the Justice Department to protect their own, because without a grand jury indictment, you are not to be held to account. It's the fox that has guarding the hen house. This is what I've discovered very deeply, but there's solutions that I'm furiously working on.
So what we need is we need an honest patriot judge who has convened a grand jury to actually address one of these things and make a presentment or an indictment, have the Justice Department refuse it, lock the U.S. attorney up, and then fight it all the way to the Supreme Court and see if public pressure will make them do the right thing?
Well, that is exactly what needs to happen.
You're brilliant.
This is going to be an ugly fight because it will be a bloody hen war between the Justice Department trying to protect whoever they want to protect versus those who want to do the right thing and hold the executive branch accountable.
You're seriously brilliant, Kelly.
It's what?
That's awesome. You are seriously brilliant, sir.
Well, I appreciate that. It's also hard to deal with because, oh, my gosh, you know, there's no president in our history that's had so many scandals because why? Because the Fifth Amendment protects them when the Justice Department will not sign the indictment.
Look, I have to say that I've been supporting every possible fight that I can find that shows any chance of success, even if it doesn't show a chance of success, even if it's a quixotic lost cause. If the right is on our side, if we're doing the correct thing by the Constitution, if our hearts and minds are in the honest place, I'm supporting it because I do believe that we need to attack on all fronts. But I've run out of time, and I've run out of energy. I'm becoming more efficient. Circumstances are forcing this on me, and I think a lot of other people. So now I'm still doing what I can in every possible broad front attack because we don't know which one might be successful. Any one of those candidates or issues might catch fire and surprise us. But I'm looking for those wedge issues, the ones where there's an awful lot of leverage, where just a little bit of effort could go a long way. Like when James Neighbors, who's going to be on soon, had the idea of going national with a couple of guys standing on an overpass with some signs, sounds real simple. And it's astounding the large effect that a small number of people can have. Well, Kelly, do you realize that if we get the right judge and the right issue that we can prosecute with the right grand jury, this could be the thing that undoes the other side completely and allows the floodgates for all of our decent candidates and issues to get in. This could do it.
Yeah.
My raffle quilt will do that.
I like your raffle quilt.
Get folks on and things of that nature. So here's how we're going to do it. Is I do want to bring James in because he's been on hold, and then I'm going to bring it to Floyd if you got any comments you'd like to state, sound like you want to chime in, and then Randy will bring it back over to you. But I do want to get some new folks in, and that is James. And thank you very much, Dan, for the segue with James here. James, you're on the line. How are you, and how are things going with Overpasses for America?
Oh, man, things are going really well. I just got back from Memphis on Sunday where we were trying to help Joe Carr beat Lamar Alexander and, you know, trying to bring him a little bit more name recognition by getting out there and rallying for him. And, you know, the fact is Lamar's been involved in politics now for over 40 years. I mean, four decades. I was just a small child when this man began his career. And, you know, it's these incumbents that have entrenched themselves into our system that owe favors and, you know, people owe them favors and, you know, they've compromised themselves that are really the root of this problem that's going on in this country. And so, you know, we're trying to get one more, trying to pull off a miracle in Tennessee, you know, much like what happened with Eric Cantor in Virginia. And, of course, Dave Bratt in Virginia still has to beat his Democratic Party opponent, but nevertheless, we've got the establishment rhino out of there, and so we've gone on a rhino hunt in Tennessee for that, and things went pretty well there, and the response was very largely positive, and here we can hope that coming up here in a few days that, you know, I believe it's less than 36 hours before the polls open, and we will see what the people of Tennessee decide in that, and, you know, let's see what happens. You know, it's also today, I was out protesting or rallying, you know, whichever word you want to use, because it is the third anniversary of the assassination of the Extortion 17 mission, and we were doing this out all over the country to bring this name to the public once again, because, you know, I follow politics, you know, even before Overpasses came along, I followed politics, but, you know, not with a very close eye. You know, I watched the news, read most more of my news than I watched the news, but, you know, politics that were going on, and as much as I knew about it, I had never heard of this thing called Extortion 17, and for those that aren't aware of it, it's where the vast majority of SEAL Team 6 and the crew on an antiquated Chinook helicopter were shot down by the Taliban. Now, the reason this happened, and it's, you know, Kelly, what you said about the executive branch no longer being held accountable, but the reason this happened is because former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta and Joe Biden on national television revealed the identities of those in SEAL Team 6. This allowed the Taliban to track them down, well, to identify them, to track them, and then ultimately kill them all, on that fateful day on August 6, 2011. And, you know, our nation lost, it was the deadliest day in the war on terror, and nobody has been held accountable for that, even though our vice president and the then Secretary of Defense were directly accountable for releasing the information that allowed them to be killed. At the very minimum, they both committed felonies of releasing top secret information, and they're both guilty of 31 counts of involuntary manslaughter, but yet they're still walking free with no worries for prosecution. And there we get down to Eric Holder. If Eric Holder were doing his job, they would have both been arrested the minute they released that information, or at least there very shortly thereof, because, I mean, we're talking top secret information, the identities of a black ops team that nobody is supposed to know who they are, let alone the Taliban. And, you know, here we are 3 years later to the day, nobody's been held accountable. The testimony by the DOD is contradictory, and nothing is being done. And so we brought again those words to the general public, extortion 17, to try to get that to try to remind people that this administration is a criminal administration. They do not care about the Constitution. They do not care about the rule of law. And, you know, President Obama has already said that he doesn't care about that. And while Congress is in recess, going to wield his mighty pen and his phone and enact some form of amnesty for the illegal aliens here in the United States. Well, that's beyond the scope of his authority and his powers of his office. And yet he's going to do it anyway because he has no fear right now of anyone doing a thing to stop him. The lawsuit by Boehner is a joke. It's a lawsuit, big deal. It's going to drag out in court for who knows how long, and will in the end accomplish nothing. And and here we are. We live in a nation. We are currently right now living in a state of tyranny where we're being ruled by executive decree, decree from the White House, and they're being enforced by the alphabet soup agencies of our federal government. Our nation was never intended to be ruled this way, but yet here we are. And, that's really the whole point of why we get out there. Most people, because it doesn't directly affect them in ways that are tangible, they don't understand just the peril that this nation is in. And that's why we get out there. That's why we get out there, every 1 to 2 weeks and some places more, to bring attention to this. Because we are on the cusp right now of absolute tyranny. And, if we don't stand up and do something, we will pass the point of no return without a bloody revolution. And, the fact that things like Benghazi and Extortion 17 and the IRS happen and our Attorney General does nothing, our Congress does nothing, we've got a long slog ahead of us. And we, the people, have got to stand up. We've got to stand up. The things with the grand jury, that those, findings like that by judges where it has to be signed by the U.S. Attorney General's office, those need to be overturned so the power can be returned. That's a check and balance that was eliminated by judges. It was a check and balance that was eliminated, and that's the problem that we have in this nation right now, is the checks and balances have been eliminated. And we have got to stand up as a people to bring those back. And we won't stop until it does happen, one way or another. And, let's hope it's one way, and that's the peaceful way. But what I do know is the lawlessness in this nation right now has got people to nearly the boiling point, nearly the tipping point. And I really don't want to see America go that route, because when Americans become angry, the tolerant, well-behaved, law-abiding citizens that we were evaporate, and Americans are capable of doing some very horrible things. You can look at Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the firebombed cities of Germany. Of what happens is when Americans set about to wreak havoc and destruction on others. And you know, most of the time, we're nothing like that. But it's almost like we're a passive-aggressive nation. And when we finally reach that point to where the passiveness ends, we become extraordinarily ugly people. And I don't want to see a chapter in American history like that. And that's why it's important that we all work together to get these checks and balances back, and return to back what our Constitution is supposed to be, you know, and shrink down our federal government to where it can't behave in a fashion like it is now. You know, if the U.S. Attorney General's office didn't exist, you know, for what sounds like almost the first 100 years of our government, it sounds to me like it ought to be eliminated as well.
Floyd, at this time, I want to, real quick, and also see there's only 15 minutes left, actually 14, live time. So anyone out there listening, if you'd like to listen to what we call the extended period of the show, because in about 14 minutes, if you're just listening to the audio, unfortunately you will be cut off and not able to hear the extended version. However, the archive will be available for you to listen to, and of course to share with other folks so they can listen to the content of the show itself. But if you'd like to listen in to the extended version or chime in, give us a call at 347-945-7428. Again, the call-in number is 347-945-7428. 28. We definitely have plenty of time, still about an hour or so, because of the extended period. So I do want to give you, Floyd, an opportunity to chime in on anything, give you the mic, and see if there's anyone there at the fair, maybe getting late there, if they'd like to come on the line themselves. Like, go ahead, Floyd.
Well, it is getting late. I think they close us down at 10 Mountain Time, so that's going to be, you know, occurring really with the end of your broadcast here. And people have been thinned down. I don't really know what to say with all these gentlemen talking. They've certainly made some decent points. In our case, we're attempting to work locally, at least in the state. We don't know at this point what's going to happen with the rest of the nation, but we can certainly try to get citizens awake here in Idaho, and that's what we're doing. That's why I'm involved in this, because people are sleeping upon their rights. And that's the real issue. The tough slog in all of this is getting the citizen active, and they are extremely resistant to getting active. And, you know, it's fine to have grand ideologies and all of that, but if you don't have active citizens who are awake, it's still not going to go anywhere, because the enemy does not sleep. And I think that we have too many on our side that are still asleep. As strange as that may seem to some of us, there's an awful lot of people who have just checked out. So when we put our signs up in a county fair and try to talk to people, it might be a limited. my boothmate here, Van Haddix, mentioned if 100 people come by and one person stops, then that's a success, and that's how we have to look at it. At any rate, my quilt raffle is for sale, and it will help us produce literature. We're running out. Literature costs money. So do county fairs. Idaho stands a good chance of actually putting some constitution Party people in the state legislature. And that's probably more than what is happening or has happened in the past. I know that Randy mentioned 150 people running for office in our party. And that's a large number for a midterm election. That's more than it's been. So hopefully we can place, and if we just had one of our candidates placed in the state legislature, that would alter the entire dynamics of the state of Idaho. You know, just one victory can do that.
I hate to interrupt, but I might actually be able to assist you. When we filed for our tax status with overpasses, we went with a 527, and that was so we could support or directly oppose any candidates, and that's what enabled me to go out to Memphis, and we stood up all over the state of Tennessee to be able to stand up for Joe Carr. We don't have any constitution candidates here, party candidates here in Oklahoma that I'm aware of. But we did actually, play a pretty sizable role in helping Dave Bratt beat Eric Cantor. And I'm not sure how long you have until your elections left. How long is that?
Well, it's a general election in November.
So okay. Then we still have some time to make a difference. Are you on Facebook?
We are. Interestingly enough, Facebook, the way it's worked over the past, the earlier years, several attempts were made to make a Facebook page, and that person lost interest. Then another Facebook page, and that person. And so there's probably about five Facebook pages for the Constitution Party of Idaho. I'm trying to keep one up, more or less. I will take a post from the cpidaho.org and put it on there just to have some traffic onto that Facebook page.
Well, the reason I ask is if you do have a representative there that could join our Idaho group, if you have any campaign signs, get with the people up there, because I'm not familiar with your candidate, but I'm sure that the people that live up there are. If you have any campaign signs or anything like that could get your candidate some name recognition, I'm quite certain that the Overpass's members in Idaho would be more than happy to get you some free advertising while they're out there, having their protests and rallies out there on street corners and overpasses. So if you have somebody there that can go there and talk to our state admin there, our Idaho group, just go to just look for Overpasses for America, and the very top pinned post is our state groups list. And right tonight, it's a picture of the Extortion 17 helicopter. And if you were to go there and then join the Idaho group or your representative and then contact them, I'm certain we could do something to help. And,
right.
And we'd love to do that. Every little bit helps. And I totally understand what you mean about people not wanting to wake up, even within overpasses, we've got the largest, political protest group in the entire nation, but we still only have a fraction of the total members that actually get out and do anything. And, which is why, of course, we're always constantly trying to grow. But no, if you wanted to do that, and present with the people there in the group what their platform is, I don't see why they, from what I understand of the Constitution Party, I don't see why they wouldn't be agreeable to giving you every bit of help they can.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll check that out. Again, we've committed to doing a string of county fairs. I'm going to be probably exhausted after the end of this. And then that will bring me into Labor Day. which is basically the start of the campaign for all intents and purposes. We decided to go with County Fair as our, technique. Our signs on overpasses are County Fair booths. It's effectively the same, a different technique in your case. That's a lot of traffic going by, not necessarily in the Jerome County Fair that's half of the water.
That's a good thing. You know, both you, Floyd, and you, James, were saying that the people weren't awake. And, yeah, I get that. They are waking. And nothing would happen until there was a direct effect on the people's lives. I think that's what's happening now. The people are waking up, and they're waking up because there's a direct effect on their lives. When you hear the mainstream media lie to you, and you don't see any evidence that it's a lie in your own life when things are going pretty well, then you have no reason to doubt them. Why would you? I mean, they are awfully credible-seeming sorts of folks. Although today it just came out that there is a secret cabal of 1,000 progressive journalists. Honest to God, folks, it's a vast left-wing or whatever statist conspiracy that are altering our news. This is actual news. But when you find that there's people in your family who are workers who are chronically unemployed, when you're paycheck to paycheck and the paychecks aren't enough to meet your bills, when you are unemployed, when you see going through a downtown area in most major cities, nothing but people who don't speak English and who really aren't Americans and don't want to be Americans. You don't know if they're illegal or not, but real good chance. When you see over and over again on Facebook and other things, examples of government using its power against innocent citizens, raiding with SWAT teams for somebody selling raw milk, going after somebody because they bought an old car that doesn't meet current inspection standards. These things, having cops actually, you know, there are plenty of good cops, but seeing them murder somebody, and there it is on camera, camera phones and social media and direct experience are waking people up. And that's why we're changing things, because we can't tolerate this anymore. As long as they were gradual with their change, their dramatic fundamental change of America, we really didn't notice much. And we were boiling away in that pan as they turned the heat up on the frog. But the thing that's been happening lately has been a galvanic shock to the body electric, that people in America are waking. And yes, there's plenty who aren't awake, and they may never awake, but I'm not really worried about them, because they don't do anything anyway. They don't do anything for the other side. They won't fight for the other side like we're fighting for liberty. And I do want to mention two other things in passing before we turn it back over. Robert didn't have control of the program for just a few minutes because he lost audio again, but it looks like he's back. One is that what we can do about this is prepare for holding the line this 2014 election, getting some good people in there, and then we can consider indictments by grand jury and impeachment of not just Obama, but any other government representative who fails in their oath, who commits criminal acts after the election in the next term of Congress and Senate. And I do also want to mention what James had started off with, talking about Extortion 17. August 27th, that's two shows from now, folks, just 2 weeks down the road, we're going to have a guy who's from my area. I know him, Charlie Strange, a really decent, down-to-earth fellow who's never politically active. But he's a heck of a patriot, and his son, Michael Strange, was a heck of a warrior. And Michael Strange was the team leader of SEAL Team 6, the ones that took out Bin Laden, the ones our government betrayed. Folks, if they can do this to Navy SEALs, the toughest, the best, the most deadly on the entire planet, what chance would any of us have against government power? We have to stop them, and we will.
Yeah.
And Bob, can you hear us now?
Okay.
Yes, I can.
Okay, well, it's your show, Bob.
Well, it's your show, the People Show, but I appreciate that, that Dan. I am the host, but so I'll do my post duties. I do see someone else just called in with only 15 seconds left of the live time. So if you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial. So as I promised, I want to bring it back to you, Gunny. So I know you want to chime in, and, but I want to be able to get James in, get some comments from Floyd. And then, but also, of course, again, Floyd, by the end of the show, I'd like you to give us a website again where folks can order the tickets for the raffle that you're doing for the quilt. Gunny, you're, or Randy, same thing. You have a mic.
Yeah, well, hey, Robert, I'm going to do something that's really, 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 really out of character for me, and that's I'm going to kind of keep this one short for right now. It's just because, I tell you what, listening to these guys, you know, I'm deeply appreciative of some of the perspectives that are now starting to come out and prevail, and you don't know how much good that does my heart to know that there are people that are really starting to wake up to this thing, man. And it's been a prayer. It's been a drive. You know, I as you called me, I'm Gunny, and that's because I'm a retired Marine. And, you know, this Marine, it was bred to fight. And so I'm in this fight to the finish, and it's good to have people fight with me. So I'm just going to turn it over back to you and just say that I really appreciate, you know, what Floyd is doing. I know that these battles are not easy, that there's a lot of opposition. At some point in time, you get tired of hearing, you gotta split the vote, you don't have a chance to win, and all this other garbage. But, you know, just keep pressing on and persevere. God bless you. I'm here to fight with you.
Okay. Great. And I'm actually networking with other talk shows as we speak, so I'm multitasking here. So with other conservative shows, so I've got that. So Kelly, I want to go ahead and bring the mic back to you. And I do see someone on the line. I'm going to do a little call screening list while you go, Kelly. So I'll be back from that duty shortly. So Kelly, the mic is yours.
Well, I'm really glad to hear from Randy. Apparently, he has learned about the eighth deadly sin, which is to not hold the microphone, not to hog the microphone. So, anyway, let's see. Well, I got to tell you guys, okay, so I've been asked to appear before the grand jury, and the question is, how do you get in front of a grand jury? Well, the First Amendment right of petition, I wrote an amicus curiae about this right that goes back to, oh, my gosh, it's stunning, and anyway, I know the Justice Department's going to block it, and then what's going to happen is the judge, if they block it, we've got a third strategy. The guy that wants me to do this, we're going to put an ad in the local paper. And under 18 U.S.C. 1504, if you look at that section,
Three Jerome County deputy guys trying to throw me out of the building here, so I've got to go.
We know some Muslim stuff.
See, he's saying some Muslim stuff. So, and he has a cowboy hat on, and you don't want to mess with him. It's black. So,
yeah.
But thank you very much, Floyd, for coming to the show. And if you go ahead and also email me the link to the website with the where folks can get the tickets, I'd appreciate it. And also, if you could repeat that website again before you have to go ahead.
www.cpidaho.org.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for coming on again, Floyd. We'll speak with you again hopefully soon. And you take care, and you have safe travels.
I will. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Well, folks, go ahead, Kelly, finish off whatever thought you may have been up doing some call screening. But we do have our beloved Cindy on the line, who I know we've missed much. So if you like, if it's okay, gentlemen, let's go ahead and bring her on.
Okay, well, I'll talk about my possible being a political prisoner in this country later. That's
okay.
Serious.
Well,
hey,
we'll
talk about it later.
Time,
okay.
We've got about, I would say, about
prison
45
is a great
minutes,
place to recruit.
Maybe 40, then I'll have to shut things off. Get what, Kelly?
Dan, I was just mentioning that prison is a great place to recruit.
Oh, geez.
Yeah,
well,
a bunch of
here
people that
is,
can help you do
nothing. Cindy Todd, your mic is live. Cindy, how are you? It's great to hear from you.
Well, I'm fine, but I wanted to hear Kelly's experience.
Well, let's hear Kelly's experience, and I just wanted to make sure we got John since it's been a while since we've been able to hear from you. So go ahead, Kelly, and let's then bring it over to Cindy.
Let me just break in for a real second because I'm going to have to check out of here. And I just wanted to say thank you so much, Robert, for all that you're doing. And, wow, it was awesome to hear Dan and to meet him online here. Phenomenal that you guys are working together and doing this stuff. Does my heart good. Good to hear you, Cindy, and good to see some of the other folks that have been out there that I've been missing, and I've been kind of missing in action. I apologize for that, but the gunny's back, and he's back in the battle, and I just want to tell you guys, hey, and God bless you, and we'll be back again.
I'm sorry.
Awesome.
I missed
you. Thank you very much, Randy. You take care. It's great to have you on.
Thank
Bye,
you, Randy.
All right, Cindy. Good night. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, Randy.
Good night.
Wow, I'm sure. Sorry, I missed that.
What's available
in
archive?
The archive.
Yeah, well, I'll have to do that. If I can ever use my computer again, I've got so much data mined off of me. I don't know even how. Well, I guess I can get on next Wednesday because my plans ends on Tuesday. So I guess I won't be on my computer for a whole week. So anyway, guys, how's it going tonight?
It's good. It's good. We're glad to hear you.
Well, I'm sorry that I can't even really speak intelligently because I don't know what you guys have been talking about. If I mention something, you're going to go, oh, yeah, we talked about that. So what's been up?
Well, we've been talking about third-party candidates, and the conversation ranged to local details and also national. We talked about impeachment. We talked about overpasses. We talked about upcoming guest Charlie Strange and Extortion 17. The usual, you know, we're just all over the place with liberty. So what's on your mind lately? What's the big focus that has been happening down your way that is that's in your heart lately? Because I'm sure it's something that even if we've talked about, we want to hear your views on.
Okay. Well, did you hear about the House just passed a resolution that would stop Obama from signing any more amnesty for the, you know, the illegals here? Did you see that?
No, tell us more I did see it in passing, but tell us more in detail.
All right. Well, Numbers USA just put out a newsletter that said that Congress has just recently passed a bill, and now I forget what it was, HR something or other, that would keep Obama, and I don't remember how the wording went, but it was going to keep Obama from being able to just write an executive order and give a whole bunch of people amnesty. Because, you know, there's apparently like 5 million people he's getting ready to use his pen and his phone again. And apparently about 5 million illegals are going to get amnesty. And this bill should stop that. However, it's got to go to the Senate now, doesn't it? And how are we ever going to get them to sign it? So I'm wondering what's going to happen with that. What do you guys think?
Well, it'll do like all things, Harry Reid. It'll end up in a circular file. I think, I don't know, remember the exact number, but it's over 550 bills passed in the House that just simply sit in, I'm guessing he has a dumpster in his office now. you know, because, you know, they reach his desk, and with him being the Senate Majority Leader, if they don't get past his office, they go nowhere. And again, it boils down to one of those things where, you know, we are living under tyranny right now. Man, Harry Reid is an open collaborator in the destruction of this nation. And, you know, it's a sad thing to see, you know, the fact that, I don't even have a problem if the man disagrees with it, but he should do his job as the Senate Majority Leader and let these House bills hit the Senate floor so they can be voted on. But
right.
Because he has this power that, you know, I didn't know until Harry Reid existed, and all these bills are sitting on his desk or in his office dumpster, I didn't know he had the power to just let them sit. I thought if the House sent something up to the Senate, that it was voted on. And honestly, that should not be. And I would have to think that was not the original intent of the Constitution or any intent of the Founding Fathers to, for the Senate to behave in such a manner. And
well,
was
that one of the things he changed, you know, because he changed some of the rules of the Senate a little while ago. Is that one of the rules that he changed and it wasn't like that before? Or
that I don't know.
It's been this way for a long time, And the reason is the founders did intend them to be two separate bodies, and the Senate was supposed to be the deliberative body, supposed to be, until they changed it by amendment to the Constitution, the body that was appointed by the state legislatures so that it would represent the states. And they were supposed to sit there, and that's why they have six-year terms, which is three times as long as the House. The House was the Democratic body. That was the body that was full of rabble-rousers and fire that might change quickly, that was more responsive to the people, directly elected, but not like a mini-presidential election, which is what we get when we elect senators today, but elected in a manner that the districts are small enough that you could really, really change those people. And even today, to some extent, they do change, not nearly enough, not as much as the founders intended. It's a political tactic that Harry Reid is using, which I believe is technically, legally acceptable, but it's morally and ethically reprehensible. I mean, it's not as if the House of Representatives is sending him over legislation that is so crazed and radical. Let's kill a whole bunch of people. Let's give away money to it. Well, actually, maybe they are. I don't know. But Harry Reid does have the right, since he is the Senate Majority Leader. Now, there's a couple of things that could happen. If the Senate doesn't change, they could certainly change their Majority Leader. They don't have to vote for the dude, even though he knows where all the corpses are buried and has a lot of money, having been in politics and nothing else his entire career. I don't know where the money came from. I'm thinking one good way to get rid of this guy, if you can't get rid of him through electoral means, is to have a local grand jury indict him, and there have been a lot of investigations, and you wouldn't need the U.S. Attorney's Office, and he wouldn't have any sort of immunity if he is indicted based on evidence of fraud and crimes, and there's a lot of smoke and guns there, so somebody out in Nevada must know something.
The constitutional scholar has to step in here.
Please.
It has to be a felony. They are quite protected while they're in Congress and when they're at their district and to and fro. But if there is a felony involved, then they have lost their protections.
Okay.
A felony?
Yeah. And by the way, a felony is 1 year or more. I mean, if you're a congressman, okay, you can park wherever the heck you want. You can speed all day long. You know, it's an infraction, and they can't do a damn thing to you because the Constitution protects you. You know, you can have an accident, misdemeanor. They can't. I mean, it's ridiculous. There are, and ironically, it is necessary so that judges or local prosecutors don't hassle our congressmen. Every one of these laws has a logical reason to it. So well, there is quite a bit of constitutional
Go ahead.
There are constitutional protections for congressmen, but if they are just way out there, the Constitution allows for them to be prosecuted or arrested or all sorts of things.
Yeah, but, well, it seems like the easiest thing to do would be just to get the people of Nevada. They're the ones that are going to have to grab the bull by the horns and just sky recall. That's the only way to.
Well, no, there's another way as well, which is if he is no longer the majority, then he can be the minority leader. This is what happened to Nancy Pelosi. She was Speaker of the House. That crazed woman, and I don't say that lightly. I actually have a fondness for people who are mentally ill because I have had a few in my family, and if they're not harmful or dangerous, they're just different, and I don't really hate or am not really afraid of mentally ill people. I've known them. I feel kind of sorry that they're going through some stuff, and those of who are artists, I'm grateful for their art if you look at people like Van Gogh. But the kind of the craziness that Nancy Pelosi has is not a good kind of crazy. She was in line to become the President of the United States under the Constitution. Had something unfortunate happen to the President and Vice President, we would now have President Pelosi. But thankfully, she is in the minority in that chamber, and that is not a possibility right now. We could have President Boehner, which is not very pleasant either. On the other hand, assuming that we're able to continue this wave of equal representation, of equal access, if we can get people in there who are willing to allow this not to be a duopoly, a two-party system that is really two sides of the same coin, there is no reason at all in the Constitution why the laws, the rules of the Senate and the rules of the House can't be changed in any sort of way. The House has the right to set their own rules. The Senate has the right to set their own rules. Right now, the Speaker of the House is elected by the majority party, but there is no, and Kelly will correct me if I'm wrong, I'm certain, but there's nothing in the Constitution that says the Speaker of the House has to be a member of the majority party or has to be a member of the party. And if I'm correct, I don't think the Constitution even specifies that the Speaker of the House of Representatives, who is in line to become president by amendment to the Constitution, even has to be a congressperson.
What? Well, there is a big chain of command even down to the U.S. postmaster to become the president. There's a chain of command.
As far as the Speaker of the House, though, in my reading and it correctly in the Constitution, that there is nothing that says the Speaker of the House must be a congressman, much less from the majority party in Congress. It's whoever the House elects.
Whoever they elect,
speaker.
Right. And about the rules.
I had heard that.
Yeah. It's based on whatever they decide because they rule their own house. Like, you know, you got your house and you got your house rules. And some house, okay, kids are to bed by 7:30. Some say no, we let them sleep till, we let them stay up until 8:30. So the house rules have their house rules. If they kick somebody out by 2/3 vote, there is no appeal to the Supreme Court, the president, nothing, they're done. Senate has the same thing, they make their own house rules. 2/3 expel a member, and there is no recourse whatsoever.
Well, hey, they can elect me as House Speaker, and I'll shake things up.
I like that. I'm serious. You'd get things done.
Draft the man. I draft James Neighbors.
Why not?
Hey, if nothing else,
you know
would
what?
Set
James,
a historical
James.
Precedent.
Here's a slogan. I mean, you'd need a lot more than this, but he's everyone's neighbor.
Yeah.
You're
right.
Well, okay.
He's everyone. Hey, that's perfect.
I like it.
You know, here's the thing that just disturbs me to no end, though. Every Tom, Dick, and Valerie that you see on TV news these days, and I'm including Fox and especially Fox, all their political analysts are coming on the news and they're saying, Well, the Republicans' biggest problem is they're not offering, they're the party of no. They're not offering a solution. And yet we have, as James just said, I think it was James that said, we have 500 and something bills that were written in the House to correct all these problems, and they're sitting on Harry Reid's desk going nowhere. That makes it a lie what they're saying on TV, that the Republicans are offering no solutions. I've even heard Republican congressmen come on and say, well, we just have to come up with an answer, a solution. And there was one other one the other day that said, I'm busy trying to come up with a solution, as if nobody had tried it before. It was the health care thing. He was talking about some health care solution he was coming up with. And there are tons of awesome solutions being presented in the House practically every day. It just seems like we are beset upon by liars and tyrants and treacherous people. And it doesn't appear that we have any recourse, because the more you think about what the Constitution allows us to do, and Kelly has brought up so many wonderful things, there's always some way they can slap us right back down again.
Well, they can certainly try, Cindy, and they have been. They only win if we give up. First of all, it's an old dictum in politics and in war that you cannot lose. No side loses until they stop fighting, all right? And it's been proven many, many times in history that fights that seem to be lost or that seem to be hopeless, lost causes, were actually won because that tireless minority refused to give up, and then things changed. Things came around. The wave came upon us. Things were different enough that they gained momentum. Look, Winston Churchill, who's everybody's favorite in this show, I think, in the 1930s, he was an outcast. He was a pariah. Nobody could stand this guy in English politics. He was in the House of Lords, and he's hereditary, so he was in there, and he had a checkered past. He'd had some big successes. He'd had some awesome failures. He was a very interesting fellow. Socially, everybody enjoyed his company because he was an amazing raconteur with stories and witticisms and all the rest of his stuff. He was a real character. But nobody paid attention to him, and they didn't like to hear what he was saying because they didn't want to hear the truth when he talked about Nazi Germany, when he talked about what was going to happen in Europe, and the way it would happen. And until a year after Chamberlain went to Munich in 37 and signed an appeasement, the pact that allowed Czechoslovakia to just be enslaved, until a year after that, right before the war started, officially, it had been going on in Spain already, nobody wanted to hear what Churchill had to say. But when events intruded, when that reality, that direct act came onto the people's lives, when they saw what was happening on the continent, when Poland was in trouble, when Czechoslovakia was gone, when Austria was taken by Anschluss, when the Soviets made a deal with the Nazis, von Ribbentrop and Molotov, when these things happened, and then they began to see this onslaught just careening across this blitzkrieg, killing people, ripping things up, taking freedom, and the Britons realized just how dangerous the situation was. They knew there was a man they could turn to, the man who had been telling them the truth all along. And he did an amazing job. Obviously, it was primarily the Americans that won World War II with our material strength and with our force of arms. There were more of us fighting and more of our armaments than anywhere else. We overcame the rest of the entire world's production combined, going from a dead stop in the middle of a depression where the factories were mothballed. We picked it up under Henry Ford and Kaiser and all the rest of the industrialists, and we did that, but we wouldn't have even done that if Churchill hadn't drawn us into the game, hadn't gotten the lend-lease going, hadn't figured a way to trade bases in the Caribbean for armaments. And by the way, remember when this started, the U.S. didn't have the armaments. The NRA asked its membership to provide weapons, and people went to their closets and they didn't have gun safes, maybe they did. They took out those weapons and they donated it to the English. That's what they were fighting with for almost a full year until our production came online and started getting across through the U-boat convoys. That was individuals. We never got those back, by the way. And I have a lot of English friends, and I do take issue with that. They're always borrowing things. They have to learn to return them. but it was a sea change, and that's what's happening now. We are on the brink of good and bad, and the bad has to happen before people realize it and start doing the good. If, God forbid, this Ebola thing starts breaking out, if the unemployment numbers start really tumbling so bad that people can't believe the real ones in any way whatsoever, if the economy crashes, if these bad things, which they can't not happen, I mean, hopefully not the Ebola thing, but, I mean, we're on the brink of disaster. There's not a damn thing we can do to stop it. We've been off the cliff for quite a long time. We're about to hit bottom. There's no way to avoid it. That's
right.
Actually a good thing, just like Obama getting elected is a good thing. Because if we had a soft landing, people would learn to live with it. People learn to live with a lot. And they'll do what they need to do to be able to survive and take care of their family. So they'll put up with a little more tyranny, and they'll put up with a little more control, and they'll put up with a little less. And the next generation will know eating whatever they're given and watching whatever they're given, and they won't have any choices, and they won't know the difference. But this terrible, terrible catastrophe that's just about to crash on not just us but the entire world is actually an opportunity, because people will be forced to see the truth, and we will have just enough time. We have just enough time to pull it out. Yeah, it's a risk, but I'm going to remain optimistic for two reasons. Well, three. One, I'm naturally optimistic. It's just the way I'm built. But cynically, ruthlessly, studiedly, I have to be optimistic for two other reasons. Number one, history tells us it is entirely possible we will lose, and it is entirely possible we will win. And they're fighting on the other side for what they want. They haven't got any willing supporters. They have a lot of people who say, yeah, I liked Bill Clinton, and Obama's not so bad. But they won't fight for it. They won't fight for it. We will. We are. And there's another reason. Folks, if you get depressed and you get pessimistic, you're not going to attract followers, and you're unlikely to be able to marshal your own resources to be energetic and efficient at anything. Tell yourself that in the morning when that alarm goes off that you cannot get out of bed, that you cannot make it to work on time, and I guarantee you, you're going to have a problem keeping that job. Hmm. Be optimistic. I've done it before. I know other people have done it. It's got to get done. Let me see what I can do. I think I could work out. And you get up, even though, I mean, this is another 20-hour day for me. I'm exhausted. And it's not over yet. You get up because you're going to get up, because it's not I don't have to. I want to. I don't have to do anything. I don't even have to breathe, okay? That's not up to me ultimately when I pass. That's up to God. But, you know, people have choices. I don't have to eat. I don't have to walk. I could sit on my behind for the rest of my life. That's something I want to do. I want to get up. I want to do things. Well, if you're already going to do it, you might as well enjoy it. You might as well be optimistic. So I want, I need, I demand a future where I can go back to having enough prosperity so that my bills are paid and so I can have things working well enough that I can go back to my nice, quiet life and study and play my music and not be worried about all this political you-know-what. And I demand that my child and your child and all the other children have an opportunity to win or lose on their own merits, to have the life that they want to go for, I will not accept that they are slaves. I will not accept it. So I am positive, cheerful, and optimistic. I am going out there because it has to get done. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to be as happy as possible doing it. My part, and my part is bringing other people to it, just like your part is. Whatever you're doing, folks, you see these brave souls, these curmudgeons, these people willing to be picked on, probably picked over by the IRS, scrutinized by the NSA, God knows what else, and embarrassed, who give up parts of their personal life, people like Floyd Whitley, people like Randy, they're willing to do this. Well, you've got to be willing to do something too. When you go to that overpass and somebody actually pulls over and says, what are you doing? Tell them what you're doing and be positive. Be cheerful. Not, oh, my God, it's all going to fall apart, so I'm going to stand here with a sign. No, it's like, hey, it's all falling apart, and I figured I wanted to do something. You know, I stood here with a sign, and 10,000 people went by, and 5,000 of them honked the horn and gave me a thumbs up. I did something today. It's really easy. What would you put on your sign? Want to come out next week with us? There you go.
Well, last time we were out there, we got a couple of contacts. So, you know, we are making a difference.
I remember.
And we are bringing more people in. So.
That's excellent.
And let's just hope it doesn't take the tragedy that Dan has just described for people to actually get up and stop watching the reality shows and spend more time trying to save their country. Go ahead, Cindy.
Well, that's why I was, when I say I'm pessimistic or when I say we don't have a chance or whatever, it's because I don't see a chance of us getting out of that catastrophe. After the catastrophe is over, people can recover as long as they're still alive. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? But it's the getting to that point. I have been so optimistic up until recently that I thought we could even avoid that catastrophe that's coming. That we're about to go over the waterfall, and in fact, some people say we're already over the falls and we're headed down and we're about to crash at the bottom. And I think that's kind of what you were just referring to. But I don't see a way to stop that part. That's my problem. I understand that on the other side of the disaster, yeah, we can pick it all up and put it back together because the people will have woken up by then. But what disturbs me the most about history, looking back at history and how people were able to divert themselves from disaster and overcome disasters, you always had a media. You had a newspaper. You had a town crier. You had a media that actually told the truth, at least part way anyway. There wasn't this across the board. I mean, there is not one. CBN News is the only news I trust right now. And they have been so marginalized because they're a Christian, you know, that nobody even listens to them. Nobody pays them any attention. But Fox and right on down, none of what they say is trustworthy. I see them open their mouths and nothing. And that's why I get this pessimistic attitude, because I feel like it needs, and for us to get our word out, we need mass media, and we don't have it.
Well, actually, I was most shocked today. I'll just throw this quip in real quick just because it's kind of entertaining. MSNBC set a precedent today. It was shocking. They actually told the truth.
Wow.
They said, yeah, I know, right? They said that Obama was a Kenyan.
Wow.
Did they really?
Of course, she tried to. About 10 minutes later, she backpedaled and was trying to retract it, but she was very confident in her original statement that he was from Kenya.
Hey, the Washington Post, not the one I used to write for, the Washington Post is entirely an organ of the administration. It is so statist. It is like their official outlet. And they had an editorial featured, number one, on their page, which all their readers, the numbers on, and the SEO stuff that I'm looking at here, I'm not a technical guy. Just somebody showed me how to do it. It's really fascinating to see, like, how popular stuff is and watch, like, YouTube videos going viral and stuff. People are reading this, and what it said is that Obama does not have the legal authority under the Constitution to simply ignore the Constitution, that he cannot ignore Congress, that he cannot legislate from the White House. This is the Washington Post. And Cindy, by the way, speaking of viral, a friend of mine is a young fella here in Pennsylvania, Justin Emmerich, awesome guy. He's a young dude, kind of reminds me of me at that age, you know, tall, really good looking, great with the ladies, but he's a militia guy. He ran for local Republican committee political office. He's in a biker organization, Sons of Liberty. I mean, he's all over the place because he's got that energy of youth, and he happens to be an excellent videographer. Well, you may have actually seen this because this went viral. You saw the little video that Mayor Bloomberg, you know, Nanny Bloomberg, put out this video that people were questioning, is this really a pro-gun argument where it shows a horrible domestic violence incident where the guy, the husband or whatever, breaks into the woman's house, she's calling 911, and, of course, the police aren't there, and he grabs the kid, she's trying, screaming, you know, crying, and he pulls a gun, and in the thing, he shoots her. It's horrible. Well, my friend made a video, and he got, you know, local couple actors, some nice with great Philadelphia accents, and it's the exact same video. She calls 911 and says, my ex is breaking into the house. He's really violent. He wants to take the kid. I've got a gun here, and I'm going to protect myself. And he comes in the house, and she racks the slide on her 12-gauge and doesn't have to shoot anybody because she starts sobbing and whimpering on the floor. And he gave me this video and a bunch of our other friends, and we started to put it out there. And within an hour, we had like 100 real movers and shakers, you know, people like Cindy, like Kelly, like James, people I know who are just like, they're real active. And they started putting this out there. And by 3 hours in, because I got it late in the evening and I have to get some sleep, it was up to about 1,000 on YouTube, 1,000 individual people viewing this 40-second clip. The next morning, we were over 100,000. Later that day, it was featured on The Blaze, on WorldNet Daily. And then it hit NBC, who said, hey, in this parody video, and that's just how much people want the truth and how easy it is to tell the truth. He just used a simple little thing, twisted one thing back around to make it true, and it's humorous as all hell. Short, sweet, to the point, like holding a sign on the overpass that just it's short and sweet enough that somebody driving at 55 miles an hour can glance at it, take it in, and they drive past it, and for the next 10 or 20 minutes or however long they're driving, they're thinking about those few words they just saw on a sign and what they mean and why they mean enough to get somebody out of their comfort zone and out of their easy chair to go stand on an overpass by a highway holding a sign and a flag. I mean, it's working.
You know what I thought of the other day? I wonder how many arguments we started, people seeing our signs and then, you know, the two people in the car thinking opposite ways politically, and so they start a discussion and it ends up into an argument.
No, but that's the beauty of it is, that's the beauty of whether it results in an argument, it does something they probably hadn't done for years.
What do you think?
That's talk, you know, that too.
You're right.
Talk, but actually talk about politics. Because most people what's the common answer? Well, I'm not interested in politics, you know, and it's just kind of, you know, it's like I tell people, well, you may not be interested in politics, but politics is very, very interested in you. It's kind of like that creepy stalker that's following you in the dark alley. Why you're in the dark alley, we don't know, but that's a whole different part of the story. You know, but it's like that creepy stalker, you know. They're listening to your phone calls and tracking your emails and watching, you know, watching your house, and they know where you work and when you go to work and what your children's names are and their favorite food. Well, you might not be interested in that crazy, creepy stalker, but that crazy, creepy stalker is very, very interested in you. And until you do something about that stalker is going to stay interested in you and going to control your life. And so politics is no different. If you don't take charge of the situation, that crazy stalker will control everything you do, and so will politics.
You know, remember one thing, though. The people
Uncle
who
Sam
are...
Uncle Sam has some...
Hold on, man. Cindy wants to...
Right.
Uncle Sam...
I'm sorry.
Just real quick. Uncle Sam has become a stalker, period.
Absolutely.
Knowing crazy people as well as I do, present company accepted...
The
people who work for the NSA are, let me just finish here, are not crazy people. They're not mostly stalkers. I'm sure there's a few bad eggs in there and some real creepy people, but most of them are just dedicated people who took an oath, who are doing their job, and they're being made to do things, asked to do things as part of the job that's probably pretty darn distasteful. So a friend of mine refers to the NSA agent who listens in on her as Bob the NSA agent. And she'll send, I got this idea from her, her name's Dorothy, a good friend of mine, and she'll actually, when she puts these messages out there, if it's controversial at all, she'll say, and Bob, for you, and she'll kind of try and explain it to a government functionary, all right? And I've kind of taken that on to heart. I think that there's a lot of Bobs out there, these nice, decent, hardworking guys who could be Snowdens, who could be patriots, who really did take the oath at one point and who maybe really don't want to be picked. They want to go after terrorists and drug cartels. They want to go after real enemies. They're not really interested in looking at boring patriots like us who really don't do anything, and we're not doing anything wrong, and all we're doing is, you know, saying we want the Constitution, we want liberty, we want prosperity. So I want to get those people, and I want to make sure that the people who are their bosses are so freaking paranoid that they can't even trust their own minions to do the job. I want them to go crazy. I want Obama and Pelosi and Reid to go so far over the edge that they're going to take a step so far too far that people who are completely asleep now will wake up, look at it, and say, this guy's nuts. This guy wants something that no one is allowed to have, that nobody's entitled to have, and we'll get rid of him. So, Bob, if you're listening, and I know you are, and not you, Robert, but Bob
here,
the NSA guy. No, I'm sorry, Bob the NSA guy. We're your friends, and if we win, you not only get to keep your job, because we need an NSA, but you get to go after the real bad guys. We want you to be able to go be heroes. We want to celebrate the fact that there are these nameless guys out there, like SEAL teams guys, but doing the surveillance part, that are spying on behalf of America, that are going after Al-Qaeda, that are trying to get involved, you know, inveigle into Putin's little dealings, that are finding out what China's up to. That's, hey, we like you. We want you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, are you really interested in what time I leave for work and get home? I have the most boring life. You feel free. Better yet, Bob, let's do this. You know my route. Hold up a sign saying, I'm Bob. Okay? I'm a very observant guy. It doesn't have to be a big sign. You don't have to be on an overpass. I'll stop on my way home, make sure it's somewhere where there's no, you know, traffic cameras. We'll have a nice one-on-one personal conversation. I'll drop you off wherever you want. Okay, Bob?
That would be a little weird to see. We've got about 10 minutes left.
Go ahead, Kelly.
I was just going to say that would be a little weird just to see Robert up there with a sign sitting on an overpass. I'm Bob.
This is Bob the NSA guy.
Yeah, it's just a name.
I don't know what his name is.
But I do want to bring it up to you, Kelly, real quick, and then we'll only have about 10 minutes before I have to shut things down. So go ahead, Kelly, and then we'll have to do our closing comments. We'll have to probably leave it at about a minute and a half each. So go ahead, Kelly.
Dan Gray has talked about mental illness and people he knows. I won't mention the man in the mirror there, Dan. All right.
I'm waving to them now.
Oh, okay. So mental illness, you know, people ask me if I like insanity. I say no. Or how do you deal with insanity? Is it a problem? I say no, I rather enjoy it. All right. So call me insane trying to do the same thing, expecting different results. Well, yeah, liberty is required. Liberty, I'm okay, so what if I bang the head against the wall? So what if people don't believe me? So what? Liberty is an internal effort. You know, of course, Thomas Jefferson said, you know, the tree of liberty must be washed by the blood of patriots and tyrants every 25 years. And it's like, you know what? We don't have to go to blood. We have many peaceful resolves with, you know, of course, elections, but they're kind of a game show. You know, of course, the grand jury mentioned that, and maybe another day I'll tell you why I'm concerned about being a political prisoner, or maybe I'll call you from jail. But anyway, there is so much that we have to keep trying. All this is insanity. That's what I'm saying. The cost of freedom is eternal vigilance. That is what Thomas Jefferson said. Did I mention eternal vigilance? No, I didn't. It was Thomas Jefferson. Eternal vigilance, which leads to what? Insanity. And I say insanity because, like, it drives me crazy that our government is doing this, and I just keep trying, and I'm communicating with a lot of people, and I'm educating people locally, and this and that and everything else. It's like we just have to keep trying, even though we feel insane because nobody's listening to us. Why do they not listen to us? Because they're not empowered. We get them empowered, eventually they're going to come back to us, and I've had this happen a number of times. People come back to me, and they're like, oh, my gosh, literally, I'm telling you, get busy, tell your friends, start voting. I have this buddy named Bill, and I always tease him when he talks about politics. We had a general election in June here in California. And so he calls me up one day. He says, oh, politics and this and that and then that, blah, 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 blah. Said, whoa. Did you vote? Well, no, I was too busy. Like, I don't want to hear it. You have to wait till November. I'm sorry, buddy. You didn't vote. Don't want to hear it. And, of course, he still calls me, and I'm his buddy and stuff, and, like, we joke around. He's like, oh, sorry, just remember, I don't want to hear it because you didn't vote. And we both laugh. But, you know, eternal vigilance requires insanity. And, by the way, that is a compliment there, Dan. So I guess I've said enough.
I think the inmates are running the asylum. And I think the definition of insanity is not doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, because things are not the same. Things always change, even small changes. Look, I don't know if I mentioned it. I probably did. A couple of weeks ago, I scraped my forearm against a rotted, wet piece of wood, and it was just a little scrape, barely broke the skin. And within a day, I had silver dollar-sized hole in my arm, 5/8 of an inch deep, and it was a flesh-eating bacteria. And I did my research. I first of all decided if I was going to lose the arm, I wanted one of those hooks. I didn't like the Darth Vader hand. I thought those hooks are pretty cool. And I decided if I went in to get regular medical care, I'd probably lose my arm because that's the treatment, is to remove more and more tissue. It's generally fairly unsuccessful until they remove a large chunk. They give you systemic, massive doses of all kinds of antibiotics, leaves you open to other infections. A lot of people die from this. So I didn't like their protocol and remembered my biochemical and microbiological training from when I was younger. And So I went after it with elementals. I used strong hydrogen peroxide in a shot glass on the arm until it stopped bubbling, let it dry. I used iodine, repeated treatments of this, plus the Neosporin. And I was watching, folks, if I saw any signs that the infection was spreading at all, I would have gone right away to the emergency room and probably lost the arm. But it's better, and it healed rather quickly. I killed the bacteria in a day and a half. But the message there is that something changed. This tiny, tiny thing changed. It could have killed me. It didn't kill me. And that which does not kill you can still leave a nasty scar, which I've got on another nice, interesting scar on my arm. But things change. Sometimes even a little change means that everything you did before that didn't work can work now. Think about the accidents that you may have been in, if you drive recklessly like I used to, in your car or your motorcycle or off the mountains or whatever the heck stupid stuff you did when you were a kid. Think about how close it was. Or better yet, think about your commute to work and all the hundreds and thousands, in my case, tens of thousands of people
Dan,
you see on the highway.
Dan, sorry about that. I really wish we had a fourth hour.
I know. Let me finish it
up real
quick.
I really wish we had a fourth hour. It does seem that we would be able to use that as well. But it is to the point where we're going to have to do closing comments each in about a minute, because then we'll run out of time, unfortunately. These days go so fast.
I'll wrap it up very quickly.
I'll
wrap it up real quickly.
Do the closing comments, and we'll bring it around to everyone, and then I'll close things out. Go ahead, Dan.
All right, just to finish up, the rest of my time goes to others. Think about your commute and all the accidents that don't happen. Think about the tiny little things, that fraction of a second, that changes everything. Well, things have changed, folks, so you can keep doing that same thing, and that same thing that didn't work and didn't work and didn't work is about to work. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Let's go ahead, and this is how we'll do it. We'll bring it to you, James, and then over to you, Kelly, and then we'll finish the closing comments with you, Cindy, and then I'll close out the show. As I said, each person probably has literally about a minute before I have to close things out. So go ahead, James.
Well, you know, the key to what we're doing here to try to save this country, it really boils down to one word. Tenacity, and that can be seen by what the enemy has done, and they have been very tenacious. They stuck to what they were doing, and they kept at it. It wasn't a quick change. It hasn't been a quick change. We slowly, inexorably marched toward this massive state that controls every facet of our lives, you know, where the EPA can come in and steal your Range Rover because it doesn't match up with regulations, and you know, so on and so forth. You know, but they were tenacious. They were tenacious. The difference is that they're fighting against human nature, and that human nature is that desire to be free. And that's where we have the edge on them, as long as we exercise that one thing, and that's tenacity. You know, we aren't going to win overnight. And I tell this to people all the time. We didn't get in the problem that we're at right now overnight. We didn't just wake up one morning and all of a sudden the government was spending trillions of dollars a year. You know, we didn't wake up one day and our president had gone from being an awesome constitutional founding father, belief-loving fella to all of a sudden, you know, he hit his head and became this horrible tyrant. This didn't happen overnight. This happened slowly because they were tenacious. And they crept it up on us. And as long as we're tenacious and we're on the right side, and we are going along with the basic human desire of freedom, and we keep that in our hearts and in our goals and in what we're fighting for, we will win. We will win.
And with that, sorry, James, with that, as I said, I might have to start doing the closing things longer so I could give people more than a minute for the closing thoughts. And I hate to cut you off. And next Wednesday, we'll try to see if we can make the change so I can give you more you guys more time to do that. But I'll have to bring it over to you, Kelly, and then Cindy.
Hey, Robert, give Kelly my time,
yeah,
too, because I want to hear why Kelly thinks that he's going to be in prison. He's going to be a political prisoner.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we never got to get to that, but I don't know. If you could do it in a minute, then let's do it. If not, we'll have to wait until next Wednesday. Go ahead, Kelly.
Julian Heiken was handing out jury nullification flyers. This is pettijury on the sidewalk and the steps of the federal courthouse. They threw him in the slammer because he wasn't in the free speech zone. He got out. He exiled to Israel. This is a political prisoner on exile. What I'm attempting to do, although lawful, legal, and good, the powers that be will realize I figured out and I've cracked the code, and therefore they will want to get me in jail because you put a full-page ad in the paper requesting the grand jury to get you in their presence. The Justice Department is not going to be happy. So I'm a little bit concerned about that, but I'm setting up protections, and we'll see what happens. But, Dan, I'm going to send you a document I think you'll find very fascinating reading, and I can continue this another day. But basically, it has come to the point where we as patriots have got to stand up, even though costs us our life.
I look forward to that, Kelly, and I'm more than willing to help you with this effort. I really have no fear of them whatsoever. It's not because I'm crazy or that they can't hurt me. It's because God's opinion of me and my daughter's future mean far more to me than anything they could do to me.
And Cindy,
maybe there is reincarnation, and Dan is really Patrick Henry.
There goes the scotch out my nose again. Sorry.
Kelly too.
Well, there we go, folks. And y'all know I hate to interrupt you and be short with you, but unfortunately, that's how time clicks here on the show. I'm considering doing one this Friday. It just depends on whether I can get some things together for Newt News Fridays. But we'll see how that develops. It's something I've been wanting to do for a while, but just haven't been able to get to it. But, of course, I do want to remind folks for the special edition tomorrow night, although it won't be a live show per se, will be a rebroadcast of the Jamail Shaw show, and that will be on at the same time at 10 o'clock tomorrow evening. So, folks, go ahead and give a listen to that tomorrow night, and because we had Althea on the show about a week or so ago. And so she has her own show as well, and we said that we'll be doing rebroadcasts here on Bard's Logic on Thursday evenings of her show just to get some more exposure for her. And then also, of course, we'll have the founder of Oath Keepers on the 20th, and on the 27th we will have Charles Strange. So look forward to those shows. But I want to say thank everyone for coming on. Please share the link to the show. Whether you do it on Facebook or Twitter or email it to folks so they can hear the content of the show as well and get the word out to the grassroots and how important it is for us to get involved. And so I will end tonight as I do every night, and that is with the beautiful song from Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. Take care, everyone. Good night, and we will see you soon. Take care.
Good night, everybody.